Today's episode of Ariel Helwani's MMA show contains explicit language that may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Ariel Helwani's MMA show!
Back in your life on this Monday, December 16, 2019. Hello again, everyone. I'm Ariel Helwani. Hope you're doing well. Hope you had a lovely weekend. Hope you enjoyed UFC 245. We're going to talk about that and a whole lot more on today's program. In fact, this program, my friends, is a very special one. This is the final Helwani show of the decade, the final live Helwani show of the decade. Now, of course, we have the podcast on Wednesday, but as far as this little shindig in studio, on camera, all that stuff, this is the final one. And what a decade it has been. I know it wasn't always called the Helwani Show. It started off as the MMA Hour, if you recall. We started the decade at AOL, then we went to SB Nation, now at ESPN. It has been a decade to remember, and I'm ready to end it on a very, very high note. I'm excited about today's show. First things first, thanks to all of you who have supported from 2010 all the way till now. We're going to do it even bigger and better next decade, but let's have some fun. Let's say goodbye to this particular one. And by the way, does the decade end on December 31st, 2019 or December 31st, 2020? People are telling me like, oh, the decade ends actually next year. I'm very confused. I thought the new decade starts January 1st, 2020. That's what I thought. That's what I'm going with, at least. If anyone has anything to say about that, you can speak to me off air, offline, as they say. But like I said, we got a lot to get to. UFC 245 in the books. Fun weekend in Vegas in the books. In fact, we had our second Helwani Roadshow on Friday at the Jimmy Kimmel's Comedy Club at the Link Promenade. What an amazing structure that is. What an amazing facility it is. It's beautiful. It's just 8 months old. I didn't realize that. So I want to thank them very much for having us. I want to thank everyone who bought a ticket. I want to thank all the fighters who attended. Derek Lewis, Joanian Jacek, Dominic Reyes, Michael Chiesa. I'm not going to spoil it for you. If you haven't checked it out, you can actually check it out right now on our podcast feed, wherever you get the podcast, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, ESPN.com, the app, wherever our show is listed, you can go right now and listen to the entire show. And it actually translates really well to audio listening. It's just an audio form for now. But we had the trivia challenge. We crowned our second Nose World Order trivia champion. There was a bit of a twist at the end, a bit of a shocker. Much like the first one in June, Stipe Miocic won. Not a lot of people had him winning. This time around, I'll just say that one of the underdogs won. The crowd was great. Everyone got a toque, a beanie. Everyone loved it. I love seeing the photos of everyone. And I know a lot of people have been asking me, where can you buy the beanie? They're not for sale right now. I do think the interest and demand in them might lead to perhaps them making a comeback. But for now, we are all out. You had to attend the event to get them. So that's the second one in the books. Hopefully, we're going to do a couple more next year. I want to thank publicly once again Elizabeth Fearman of ESPN, who puts this on and does a phenomenal job of doing so. Incredible. Not just for us, but the Woj Pod had a live show a couple weeks ago. And Jalen Jacoby, fantasy focus. She is just amazing. And the team here at ESPN, TST, did a great job. He was there for his first Vegas trip. It was just great. I loved every second of it. And it was great to meet the fans afterwards as well. I love doing those live shows. So if you haven't checked it out, do check it out. It's on the podcast right now. But of course, the big news, UFC 245, Kamaru Usman is still the UFC welterweight champion. He retains the belt by defeating Colby Covington in the fifth round via TKO. What a fight. It was an amazing fight. Not one single takedown attempt in that fight. And if you heard our live radio show before the event, we were on the air. Chael P was on with me. New York Rick was on with me. I predicted that it would be essentially a kickboxing match. Now, did I think there would not be one single takedown attempt? No. I thought maybe at the end of the round, someone might try to steal the round by going for a takedown. But in the end, there wasn't one. And that's amazing, considering the fact that both these guys are wrestlers. But as we've seen time and again in the sport, when you have two great wrestlers going toe-to-toe, the wrestling actually cancels each other out, and they stay on their feet. And it was a fun fight. Colby Covington landed some big shots. Kamaru Usman has a chin. He landed some big shots. I scored the first two rounds in favor of Colby Covington. I had him winning two rounds to none going into the third, and then everything changed in the third. As you may have heard, going into the fourth round, Colby Covington told his corner that he may have broken his jaw, and this has led to some discussion as to whether or not they should have actually stopped the fight. Good thing they didn't for his sake, because he still wanted to fight. But no one even batted an eye. Like, his cornerman, Conan Silvera, was like, all right, I just need 10 more minutes out of you. And that's pretty amazing. Like, if I would have broken my jaw, like, if I break my jaw right now, I'm in a ball crying for the next like 3 days, begging for my mom to come and save me. Imagine breaking your jaw. Just for a second, imagine the sensation of breaking your jaw. I don't care if it's a big fracture. I don't care if it's a small fracture. And then continuing to fight for another 2.5 rounds, continuing to get punched in the face and, you know, hanging in there. I know he got dropped in the fifth and towards the end of that last round, it was starting to look really bad for Colby Covington, but let's give this guy some credit. So I had the first two rounds for Colby, third and fourth for Usman, close rounds. And then the fifth, I had him winning it. Eventually, it was stopped. Didn't have a big problem with the stoppage by Mark Goddard. I know that Colby is upset about the stoppage. I spoke to him briefly yesterday via text message, and he's taking some time off, understandably so. I mean, his jaw is messed up, so hard to speak. I know he was upset. I think the more egregious moment in the fight was the quote-unquote low blow, which did not seem to be a low blow. If I'm being honest, from my vantage point, the eye pokes did seem to be legit. That one was a major turning point in the fight because it halted Covington's momentum. But in the end, Usman wins and deserves a lot of credit for coming back. If you listen to Rashad Evans's commentary after the fight on SportsCenter, I thought he had a very astute point about Usman stopping his switching of stances, which led to a more conventional attack and a more basic attack, but it just got him on the straight and narrow and was able to focus him on doing what he had to do to win those third and fourth rounds going into the fifth, where, of course, you know, the tide completely turned and he was able to finish Colby Covington. But for me, I understand. Look, Usman deserves all the credit in the world. He is the king of the welterweights. He ends the decade as the welterweight champion, and now we wonder what's next for him. But one thing that just kind of did bother me a little bit is this reluctancy to give Colby his due. Now, I know he's a very divisive character. He's a very polarizing character. A lot of people were happy that he lost, and that's okay. It's okay to be happy that he lost. It's okay to cheer for Usman, even if you're not an Usman fan, but because you hate Colby Covington so much that you wanted Usman to win. That's okay. That's fine. But let's give this guy some props, man. The guy fought 2.5 rounds with a broken jaw. And that was, I mean, that fight was essentially fought in a phone booth for the majority of the fight. They were going toe to toe in the trenches. It was a tremendous battle. And I see people using words like, oh, he got his comeuppance. He got what he was due. He, you know, what he deserved for everything that he said and everything that he did after the fight. By saying that and not giving him any credit, essentially what you're doing is proving to the world that everything that he did, all the antics, the gimmick, all that stuff, it worked. Because you don't usually, like, no one says Max Holloway got his comeuppance. No one says Jermaine Durandamy. No one uses terms like that in the fight game unless you truly despise the person who lost. And why did you despise him? Because of the things that he said. Because of the things that he did. But he told us time and again that he was doing that to get a reaction out of us. Now, does it absolve him from some of the things they said, the abhorrent things that he said, particularly about, you know, the likes of the late Glenn Robinson? No, but you're only just admitting to yourself that you fell for it. That you were a mark just like everyone else. He wanted you to fall for it, and you did. And so it's, again, it's okay to root against the guy. It's okay to root in favor of Kamaru because you hated the guy. But can we just take a step back and appreciate the fact that this guy went in there, fought like he did, had a broken jaw, suffered a broken jaw, and was able to continue to fight? Like, let's give both of these guys some credit. You know, I know that fans are betting, and I know you're drinking, and I know it's entertainment and stuff like that, but if we could just, on this Monday, take a step back and appreciate what both those men did, the kind of fight that they put on, and the kind of heart and will and determination that they showed. Forget about all the other stuff. Forget about comeuppance. Forget about all that nonsense, all the talk, all the rhetoric. These two guys are high class fighters, high level fighters. I think what Dana White said was very apropos on Saturday night. You know, regardless of everything that Colby says, the guy deserves credit for being a really tough and talented fighter. And I hope that at some point that can be the story. Now, did he bring a lot of this upon himself? Sure. But just take a step back and at least appreciate that. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying for you to be a fan of his, to get his poster or anything like that. But it's really remarkable what he was able to do. And now the big question is, who's next for Kamaru Usman, right? Who's next for this guy? I think the big story coming out of Saturday is that the three champions, one of them being new because Alexander Volkanovski defeated Max Holloway with a phenomenal game plan, a phenomenal performance. He's now won 18 in a row. The 13-fight featherweight win streak for Max Holloway has come to an end. Now all of a sudden we have our first Australian-born champion, because remember, Robert Whittaker was not born in Australia. Volkanovski, Australian-born champion, defeats Holloway in a fairly one-sided affair. And he's the new featherweight king. And of course, Amanda Nunes retained against Jermaine Durandamy. But to me, the biggest takeaway as I walked away from T-Mobile Arena on Saturday was, who's actually next for these three champions? Because sometimes and oftentimes when a champion wins, defends, captures a belt, you know who's next in line. You know who's on deck, right? Like when Israel Adesanya defeated Robert Whittaker back in October, you knew that Paulo Costa was up next. Of course, he got injured, but we knew who was the number one contender. In all three respective weight classes that were on display in those title fights, we don't really know who's next. Like, who's next for Kamaru Usman? Is it Jorge Masvidal? Does Jorge Masvidal even want that fight? I'm not convinced. I don't even think he's going to go for that fight. I think he's going to wait to see what happens on January 18th. I think he's going to wait to see if Conor McGregor wins, and then he's going to go for that fight. And if not, maybe one of the Diaz brothers. So who is next for Kamaru Usman? And who's next for Alex Volkanovski? Is it really Max Holloway? Are they really going to run it back? Is there a demand to run it back? I know they're going to Australia for a pay-per-view later next year, so you could sell it. You have to put Volkanovski on that show. Will anyone else emerge? Korean Zombie this weekend against Frankie Edgar? Who's there? And then what about at 135? Is it Irene Aldana, who had a great performance on Saturday but has only won her last two in a row? Is she ready for someone like Amanda Nunes? Is it Megan Anderson, who's only won one in a row? Is she ready for someone like Amanda Nunes? Nunes said she wanted to fight at 145 in her next fight. It's very wide open for those three champions. Very wide open. So I'm really curious to see where they all go from here. Interesting times. Great performances across the board. What about that win for Piotr Jan against Uriah Faber? I said it when the fight was announced. I didn't like that fight for Faber. I thought Jan was too young, too tough, too powerful. It just didn't make sense. It didn't have to happen. Slowly build Faber back up. Buy yourself some time for the TJ Dillashaw return. Maybe a title. But like, Jan, at this point, man, that's tough. And then Jose Aldo loses in his 135-pound debut. We were worried about his weight. We were worried about the cut, the way he looked, all kind of sucked in and drawn out. Made the weight and looked pretty darn good. I thought he won the fight. 2-1. I thought he won the second and the third round. Didn't. But then afterwards, Dana White saying that, you know, maybe he'll fight Henry Cejudo. And I know Cejudo put out that video. But how do you justify giving Jose Aldo a title shot now coming off two straight losses? That would be bizarre. When you have Aljamain Sterling out there, when you have Corey Sandhagen out there, when you have Piotr Jan out there, how do you justify giving Jose Aldo a title shot? That to me is bizarre. And what about Jeff Neal with the win over Mike Perry? A very impressive win for a guy who has become one of the breakthrough stars of 2019 and may, in fact, end up being one of the first title contenders to emerge from Fortis MMA in Dallas, that up-and-coming team as well. Matt Brown with a nice win. Brandon Moreno with a nice win. All across the board, Chase Hooper with a nice win. So that's the 245 story. There's one more event this Saturday, the final UFC event of the decade, 362nd event of this decade. It's in Busan, South Korea. It's Chan Sung-jung against Frankie Edgar. Before we get to our lineup and our first guest of the day, how about a little poll for all of you? I know you love the poll. So I talked about, you know, who will be next, not should be next, who will in fact be next for Kamaru Usman. Corporate Jake, put this one on the poll. Who will, and maybe capitalize, or can we bold on Twitter? No, you can't bold on Twitter. Maybe capitalize on Twitter, who will, not should, who will be next for Kamaru Usman. Let's see, Leon Edwards, put him on there. Jorge Masvidal, put him on there. Tyron Woodley, why not, put him on there. And just to piss everyone off, put Conor McGregor on there, all right? I think that will
you got it.
Make everyone very happy. Okay, here's today's lineup, and then we shall get to our first guest of the day. And I'm looking forward to this show, my friends, because anytime we have in-studio guests, and this week we have two, it's always a little extra special. At 3:45, we're going to be joined by the California kid himself, Uriah Faber. I spoke to him on Saturday night, was in good spirits after the loss, as he usually is, and was kind enough to say yes to coming on today's show. So I'm looking forward to having him on and talking to him about where he goes from here. at around 3:10. We're going to be joined in studio by the aforementioned Megan Anderson. I believe she has some news to share. I'll talk to her about her win in October at UFC 243 in her home country of Australia. Of course, now there's an Australian-born champion in Alex Volkanovski. Talked to her about Amanda Nunes as well. So a lot to get to with Megan Anderson. We'll talk to Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, who will be joining us in studio as well. One of the best welterweights of the world, coming off that win over Vicente Luque at Madison Square Garden in November last month. Get his thoughts on the welterweight title picture and what's going on with him. Also find out how those hands are doing. He has this great YouTube page that he launched recently, and he's been doing these workouts without using his hands. It's unbelievable. The guy is just, he's incredible. 2:15, we're going to be joined by the face of PFL, Kayla Harrison. She returns to action, of course, on December 31st for their final show of the year, the big championship show where they crown all the champions and they give out the $1 million rematch against Larissa Pacheco. So since this was, this is going to be our final live, show on Monday of the year, we wanted to have Kayla Harrison on. Looking forward to talking to her. We'll also talk to Jessica Ai, who missed weight by 5 pounds prior to Saturday's fight. And that was, pretty egregious. She ended up defeating Viviane Araújo, but she missed by 5 pounds. We'll find out why and where she goes from here. Is she going to stick around at 125? She weighed in at 131. So when you consider the 1 pound allowance, 131, 5 pounds over. So we'll get her thoughts on all of that. We'll also talk to Leon Edwards, who was in attendance. Could he, in fact, be next for Kamaru Usman? You'll recall his last loss was to Kamaru Usman, and he's now on an 8-fight winning streak. Maybe he emerges as the number one contender. And Jeff Neal will stop by to talk about his big win over Platinum Mike Perry. He has now won 7 straight in a row. But first, let's say hello for the very first time to a young man who is the youngest fighter on the UFC roster. He is just 20 years young. He won on the Contender Series last year. They put him on this developmental deal. He's 9-0-1, won his UFC debut on Saturday against Daniel Taymor. It was an unbelievable back-and-forth war, ups and downs. But in the end, the teenage dream himself, Chase Hooper, not the man who created Facebook, Chase Hooper, the youngest fighter on the UFC roster, emerged victorious. And there he is. Chase, how are you?
Hey, I'm great. Neck's a little sore. Tamer tried to rip it off, but other than that, I'm doing good.
Well, congratulations on your first win in the UFC, and it's great to have you on the show. Okay, so let's start right there. That guillotine choke, which was a little bit uncomfortable to watch because you were moving all over the place, gyre, and then you used the cage as leverage to try to get out of it. How tight was that, and how close were you to actually tapping out?
I kind of knew that, there was no way I was going to tap. I was either going to, go out or die, before I tapped, but, it was more just kind of crushing my neck. It wasn't, it wasn't choking so much as just like squeezing, but, he's pretty jacked. He was a lot bigger and stronger than I thought he'd be. And, he definitely had a pretty good hold on it.
And so this has become a little bit of a theme for you, right? Like you win the fights, but you do often find yourself in a little bit of trouble early on. How do you avoid this kind of scenario moving forward in your career?
I think I'm a little bit of a slow starter sometimes, but I definitely try to have pretty hard warm-ups. And I think that usually helps a little more. Like my last fight before my UFC debut for Titan, I had probably like 3 hours to warm up, and I went in there and finished them pretty quick.
So you're saying having more time to warm up actually helps you as opposed to slows you down?
Yeah, I feel like I'm really not warmed up until I kind of have hit my second wind. I like to kind of do the Dominic Cruz style of having like a whole fight before the fight.
Okay, interesting. And in this particular case, you did not have that luxury.
Yeah, I'd say it was probably about an hour.
Okay.
But we still got a good warm-up in.
Now, the finish was phenomenal to watch as well because you had the mounted triangle and you were just raining down the elbows and the shots. Is that a particular technique that you work on? I mean, you have a very long body, so it seems like your legs would help in a case like that. Was that something that you actually worked on for this fight or just in general?
I'd say that's a big part of my jiu-jitsu style is trying to utilize my length as much as I can. I use the mounted triangle position a lot, and I prefer it to the regular like mount, because I feel like it's so much easier for guys to like bridge and scramble out. But when I just have like the guy's head in his arm, there's not much he can do.
First UFC event now under your belt. Of course, you fought on the Contender Series, but that's not quite like a UFC pay-per-view, especially a big one like this one, T-Mobile Arena, the glitz and glamour of Las Vegas. What was the experience like for you? Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, it was a great time. I enjoyed all of it. Pretty much from the walkout to the entire fight, like I was smiling my whole way out. And, you know, rather than being like super nervous, obviously I, you know, didn't want to get beat up. But yeah, I felt great about it, and I had a really good time in Vegas.
20 years old, youngest fighter on the roster. I'm wondering, when did you start to actually dream of becoming a UFC fighter? When did this all start for you?
I started doing jiu-jitsu when I was 8 years old, so probably about 12 years into this. Yeah, I just kind of stuck with it. But I actually got to watch my coach when he was in the UFC. I was probably about 11 when I watched his UFC debut. He also debuted in Vegas, so that was pretty cool to be able to kind of have that like come full circle. But I've been kind of chasing this dream for a long time. I really kind of buckled down probably at around 16. I won the IBJJF Pan Americans. I got first in my division, and I got second in the open weight for Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And that's kind of when I figured out, like, hey, I'm pretty decent at competition. You know, I'm good at dealing with the stress, and I like it. So maybe I'm going to try to pursue this.
And your coach, by the way, Jeff Hoagland, who was in your corner on Saturdays, fought the likes of Gilbert Melendez and Takei Mizugaki, fought in UFC back in the day as well. So great to have a veteran like him in your corner. And I'm wondering, did you talk about being 16 years old and focusing on this dream seriously. Did you graduate high school?
Yeah, I did. My senior year, I actually did it's called the Running Start Program in Washington. I'm sure it's different everywhere else, but essentially I was taking like college classes so that I could fulfill my high school credits at like the local community college. But I was able to take all those classes online and kind of work around the schedule so I could dedicate myself to training. And I think that was a huge help. It gave me like a whole extra year of not having to waste 6 hours a day.
How did your family feel about this when you told them that you wanted to become a pro MMA fighter?
They were pretty supportive. I feel like I kind of had been doing it for a while. Like, I've been doing jiu-jitsu competitions, and it was kind of the natural progression of things. It wasn't necessarily just like one day I wanted to do MMA. It was kind of a slow build, like just a natural progression. I started doing local jiu-jitsu tournaments, then bigger ones. Then I wanted to do like kickboxing smokers, and then kind of went from there.
Obviously you probably get a lot of comments about your look, right? Because you don't look like your typical MMA fighter, and the Jesse Eisenberg jokes, and you kind of play into it as well. When you tell people that you're an MMA fighter, I don't know if you're meeting them here or there, do you get a lot of comments like, okay, no, but honestly, what do you do, or where do you go to school? Do most people not believe you initially?
Yeah, definitely. Most people just think I'm some, you know, college kid probably, but like I've had for other fights, like people will just assume that my coach is the fighter and not me, but because he's a little more rugged than I am, I guess, a little more beat up. But yeah, I think it works. It, you know, lets me stand out from the crowd. So many people just look like dudes with facial hair that are jacked with tattoos. And it's like, you know, what's different about you? Not much. So you got to kind of find your way to stick out. And for me, it's, you know, I look like a weird dude, which I am a little bit. And I try to embrace that.
When you say that, and by the way, do you mind centering yourself? It's do you see yourself a little bit?
Yeah,
to the
you.
There we go. You say you are a weird dude. You're owning up to this. How so?
I guess not so much. Not too weird, but you know, I just play video games all day. I try to take naps as much as I can. I look more like, it's more what people want to do. I look more like a tech support guy or like a college tutor or something, you know?
Yes.
And the thing is, I could probably help people with their tech problems, and I could probably help them with their math.
And you're okay with that?
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to keep my brain as good as I can. So, you know, I'm going to definitely work on the not getting hit as much.
Right. Do you think it helps you when your opponent sees you for the first time and they're like, oh, this guy, this is like, you know, you're fighting a 30-year-old guy. He's like, this is going to be a walk in the park.
Definitely. I think most people overlook me because of my age, and they probably get more confidence when they see how young I look and how like skinny I am and awkward. But yeah, I kind of I don't really show up until the night of the fight. You know, I try to be pretty casual about everything up until then. And I think that that lets guys overlook me, but that plays into my favor.
Speaking of your age, your nickname is the Teenage Dream. Are we sticking with it even though you're no longer a teenager?
So drop the teenage part, and it's just the Dream now.
Oh.
I don't want any cases with the FBI or anything, you know.
Right, right.
I don't want to get investigated.
Okay.
But if Reebok wants to make some Teenage Dream throwback tanks or something, I'm down.
Okay. Who gave you that nickname initially?
I think it was like my coach and my teammate, Joey Perotti, who's now signed to 1FC. He's a welterweight. But it's more just because I'm, you know, I don't really like fit the name, I guess, but I am like, I live the lifestyle that so many people that were like my age wanted to live. You know, I just get to travel around and fight and make money for it, not have to have a job and just kind of lounge around all day. But, yeah, also because I'm not really, like, I'm not as cool as the name implies.
Right. So it's a bit of an ironic nickname, if you will.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm sure your friends think you're the coolest, though, right? I mean, do you get a lot of support from them? Do you have any friends?
I have a lot of, I'd say a lot of more of my friends are training partners, you know? Like, I don't have a lot of friends outside of the gym anymore because, you know, it's just the nature of the game. It just takes so much time away.
Right.
Like since I was 8 years old, I've been sacrificing pretty much everything for this goal. Like I wouldn't hang out with some of my friends from school cause like, oh, sorry, I got to go do jiu-jitsu. But there I am at like 12 years old. It probably doesn't matter, but to me it did at the time. And, I'd say it's worked out so far.
And by the way, what's with the infatuation with M&Ms?
I don't know. I'm just, sugar is kind of my vice, I guess, sugar and caffeine. And peanut M&Ms are probably just the one thing that I like the most.
Okay, so that's the number one for you, peanut?
For
what's
sure.
The top three? Peanut?
Peanut. I like the mini M&Ms.
Oh, interesting.
Not the regular ones.
Right.
They're pretty bad. I'd say number three, probably pretzel.
The pretzel
M&Ms, I just had them last night.
Wow. Did you go to the M&M store in Vegas?
I was trying to, but it was just, it was too wild. Like, I just kept getting stopped by like lines of people.
Really?
And yeah, I wasn't used to that, but I guess I'm somewhat recognizable, you know, like a skinny little weird kid.
Right.
Especially with the UFC bag.
Okay. Wow. And Ben Askren also has taken a liking to you.
Yeah. He's been great about, you know, giving me some shout outs and, I try to play along with it.
Yes. It's wonderful. It's great to see that emerge. Have you ever met him?
No, I haven't. We'll see. We'll see if he invites me out to do some wrestling or something.
Oh, that'd be great. I'd love to see that. The two, afros going toe to toe. Well, congratulations on a very successful debut, a very entertaining fight. I know you probably didn't want it to be that entertaining, especially, early on, but it was very memorable and, great to see you get out of that and eventually the finish in the first round, and very much looking forward to seeing, your career progress from here on out. So enjoy it. Happy holidays. And, again, congratulations on an amazing debut.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. There he is, Chase Hooper, a.k.a. The Dream, no longer the Teenage Dream, just The Dream. Successful debut, youngest fighter on the roster, and definitely a a name to keep your eye on, won the developmental deal. So he went out and after Contender Series fought for a couple of different promotions, then gets the call up and defeats the veteran Daniel Taymor, now on a 3-fight winning streak, is Chase Hooper. All right, let's move along now and say hello to another man who had a great night on Saturday in Las Vegas, had a big win over Mike Perry in the prelim headliner. He's now won 7 in a row, and he has emerged as a real player at 170 pounds and may become the first champion to emerge from Fortis MMA, one of the rising teams in this sport. There he is, Jeff Neal, joining us once again. Jeff, how are you? Congratulations on the win.
I'm good, my man. I appreciate it, man. Thank you.
So this fight felt like maybe not a step up in competition per se, but definitely a step up in terms of like spotlight, right? They're putting you in that prelim headliner spot, really just like a step up in notoriety. Did you view it as such? And did you feel like you had to make a statement, do something spectacular in order to prove to everyone that you are a player at 170?
Yeah, for sure. It was a big opportunity for me. I was honored that they, gave me that shot to be like the guy closing out the prelims, you know, and against a tough opponent that everybody knows and he puts on exciting fights. Me and my coach talked about it and he told me, like, hey, you gotta get something done here. You gotta get the job done and get it finished. And that's what I did.
I know you were saying before the fight that you wanted to be the first man to stop Mike Perry via strikes. He's been submitted before, but never knocked out, never lost via TKO. And so that was a goal and you were very clear about that. But be honest with me, did you think it would happen that quickly, a minute and 30 seconds?
Not at all. I was really surprised. Like, you could tell by my excitement after I got the finish. I wasn't expecting that to happen that quick, but I'm glad I took no damage against a tough opponent that's durable and usually puts it on his opponent. So couldn't be happier.
I don't know if you have, you know, a take on this or insight on this, but I was wondering if Perry was coming back too soon after the broken nose. I mean, that happened 4 months ago. In hindsight, do you think he came back too soon?
I wouldn't have came back so soon. You know what I mean? I would have took at least 6 months off to make sure my nose is fully healed. But it's Mike Perry. He's a warrior. You know what I mean? That's just the type of guy he is. So it wasn't surprising that he did it. I wouldn't have done it myself personally.
After the fight, I thought it was really interesting because Joe Rogan was talking to you in the cage and, you know, kind of talking about how you're, you know, a player now at 170 and all that stuff. And you were like, nah, give me like 2 or 3 more fights before we start talking about that. Why? Like, you don't hear fighters say that. Why did you say that?
Because it's true. You know what I mean? I'm only 5-0 in the UFC. I still got work to do. You know what I mean? Like, the 170-pound division is a whole bunch of dogs. You know, I want to. When I fight for the belt, I want to be 100% ready. I don't want to get rushed and just thrown in there and then take a loss and then people just forget about me. You know what I mean? I want to be 100% ready for my opportunity when it comes.
You say that you still have some things to work on. Like what? Like, what are you unhappy with?
I mean, everything. You know, there's always room to grow. You know what I mean? Even like people say my striking is this and that. I still need to work on that. You know, there's so much in the sport. And like I said, 170-pound division, everybody's good everywhere. You know what I mean? So I want to get to a point where my skills are just elite and nobody can touch it.
So you fought in Las Vegas on the Contender Series, of course, but that was your first, you know, numbered show in Las Vegas, first big show in Las Vegas, T-Mobile Arena. Mm-hmm. What was the experience like? Did you feel like, all right, this is different than fighting, say, in Edmonton or, you know, another American city? Did it feel any extra special for you?
To be honest, no. I treat every fight the same. I try not to focus on the crowd when I walk out. I keep a tunnel vision. I hear people say my name, but I don't pay attention to it. I don't focus on where I'm at. You know, the only thing that matters is that dude inside the cage that's going to try to take my head off, and I try to keep myself grounded and just focus on that.
So the last time we spoke, after the win in Edmonton, talked about you having the other job as a waiter, but I understand. Uh-huh. No more, right? You left the job recently?
No more. I left it like once I found out about the Mike Perry fight 2 weeks after, I was like, man, I just can't do this no more. I don't need that extra stress on my back because it was a huge fight. Like, you know what I mean? I tried to keep it to where I didn't think about it like that, but at the end of the day, it was a big fight. You know, like it was make or break for me. If I would have lost that fight, then I'm like, oh, Jeff, he was all hype, you know? So I knew I had to get the job done and I had to do it in spectacular fashion. So I needed my full concentration on that.
How much less stressful is your life these days now that you could just focus on MMA training?
Oh man, it's so much less stressful. It's usually during the weekends, like I'm always stressing, like, cause the weekends you just want to chill and relax, you know, but I usually have to go to work until like 3 o'clock in the morning. So, now during the whole camp, like if Saturday hits, you know, I'll work out in the morning, then I have a whole day just to relax and, focus on me, you know what I mean? To recover, all the bumps and bruises from the week. And, I'm just so glad that I finally decided to quit.
Was that a nerve wracking decision? Like, were you worried about losing that extra income, losing that cushion, yeah, so to speak?
Yeah, for sure. I was just thinking in my head, I was like, man, I'm going to quit my job. I'm going to get my ass beat. And then I'm going to go back, try to get my job back, you know? So, that, of course that didn't happen. I didn't want it to happen, but, that did cross my mind.
So you seem like a very calm guy, and you said that every fight is the same. You don't make them into a bigger deal than they are. But did you feel more nervous going into this one because of those stakes?
I did. I honestly did. It wasn't until like fight day that I kind of snapped out of it, but, it was, I'm not going to lie, it was kind of a lot of pressure, you know what I mean? Because like I said, it was make or break, and I needed to win that fight, and I needed to win it in spectacular fashion. But I handled it well, read a couple little things online that helped me, and I got through it.
Like what? Do you mind sharing what you read?
There's a link. I wish I could like tell you the exact link, but it was just something like to keep your game day focused and to have like seven little steps, and I read the steps, and I just kept on replaying those in my mind.
Wow, and who sent that to you, or did you just find it yourself?
I Googled it.
Oh, really? What did you Google? Yeah. What did you search?
Fucking some of my focus is keeping my focus on game day, and just type that in, and then like a whole bunch of links popped up, and I just found one.
Wow, and so was this the first time you looked for something like that?
No, I do it a lot. I do it regularly.
Oh, really? Okay.
Just, depending on, yeah, whenever I'm like going through stuff or something that's bugging me, I always go on Google and I try to look for extra motivation.
Wow. Okay. But you did feel like, all right, I'm a little more nervous and I need to calm down. I can't let this one, yeah, you know, I can't let the nerves and the moment get to me, so to speak.
Yeah, for sure. Like, and that's the last thing I want is like me ruining an opportunity because of me. You know what I mean? Like, not because of how good he is or like anything else. I wanted to make sure that when I step into the cage, I'm the best fighter that I can be.
Mm. I recently learned about something called situational pressure. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, sort of, yeah.
Well, I was bugging out about something, and a friend of mine sent me some sort of definition of situational pressure, which the way I interpreted it was like the fear of getting a big opportunity and faltering and not being able to get back to that spot, right? And feeling like if you mess up, yeah, you know, that's it, it's over, and that's situational pressure. Uh-huh. But knowing in your heart of hearts that you will get back, that even if you do mess up, that you'll be back there and everything will be okay and it's not the end of the world. When you recognize that it's not make or break, that one night is not the most important night of your life, it actually alleviates some of the pressure. At least it worked for me. So that's something that I think about a lot now, if I get nervous before a big moment, a big event, something like that. So yeah, it sounds like a sort of similar thing that you were going through.
Yeah, that, and the little article I read, they kind of had something about that. It's like step one, just remember that there is a tomorrow. You know what I mean? This is, yeah, the end. So just do your best.
Yeah. And what a year for you, man. I mean, 3-0 this year. Had I told you at the beginning of the year that it would end like this, 3-0 against three tough guys, finishing in that headliner spot on the year-end pay-per-view, I'm assuming you would have taken it, but have you exceeded your own expectations this year? Did you think you'd be this far along?
Honestly, yeah. It's me and Coach Safe, he puts these expectations to us, and this was part of the expectation. You know, he's like, we're going to get you three fights. You're going to be in the rankings. You're going to do this and that. And we've really accomplished everything that we set out to do this year.
So I'm assuming you stuck around or at least watched the main event, Kamaru Usman and Colby Covington.
I didn't stick around. I left because I wanted to get back to the hotel, but I watched the Holloway and Volkanovski fight on my phone while we were riding back to the hotel. And then we went to a bar and watched the Usman fight.
So the guy, like, I mean, that's your weight class, right? That's the champion in your weight class. You didn't want to watch it and get the opportunity to watch the championship fight in person?
I mean, because I wouldn't be able to watch it in person because they had us in the green room anyways, and I didn't want to sit around in the green room and watch it on that TV. I wanted to get back to the hotel and grab me a drink before yeah, so I just watched it on TV. I got to see everything.
What did you think of Usman's performance?
I thought it was good, man. His cardio is amazing. Both their cardio is amazing, and I was really surprised that they sat there and they stood up and punched each other in the face the whole time. I was expecting a little bit more wrestling, but it was a fun fight to watch.
When you're watching that, are you sizing him up? Are you saying, okay, you know, this is how I would fare against him. This is how I would fight him. This is how far along I am. You know, this is how close I am to fighting someone like him.
I'm going to say I'm sizing him up. You know what I mean? I was just looking at it for the entertainment. You know, I know my next fight's not going to be against him, so I'm not really focused on what he's doing. You know what I mean? I'm really trying to see and scout the people that I might be fighting next.
You don't strike me as the, you know, the call someone out type of fighter, but do you have someone in mind that you'd like to fight next that gets you a little closer to the championship fight?
I mean, to be honest, there is one dude, he hasn't fought in a while, Pazinibbio. I would love to fight him.
Oh.
But other than that, there's really nobody else that just stands out that like, hey, I want to fight this guy right now today.
Well, it's interesting. You look at the stat right over there. You've now won 5 in a row as far as active win streaks are concerned. He's the next one up, number 7. So it would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, and it makes sense, exactly. And that's what me and my coach are talking about. And, that's the one that I do want. Hopefully that comes to play. But other than that, that's the only person.
And I'm assuming you didn't get hurt in this fight, right? So relatively quick turnaround?
We'll see. We'll see. I want to say relatively quick. I'm gonna take like 10 days off to kind of reset my mind, because it's been ever since the Bilal fight, this whole year has been nothing but training, working, just grinding. I haven't took no time off, so I'm gonna take like a good week and a half off and reset, and we'll see what's next.
Fortis MMA Team of the Year. What do you think?
Oh yeah, 100%. Yeah, best team in the world. We're doing big things. You know, we have so many guys on our team on win streaks. You know what I mean? We're not losing. We're going out there and we're finishing people and we're putting on exciting fights. You know, team of the year. We're going to be team of the year this year, team of the year next year.
Well, congratulations on a big year, my man. Congratulations on a great win. What a performance. I mean, to finish a guy as tough and durable as Mike Perry like that in just 90 seconds is pretty remarkable. So congratulations. Enjoy it. And looking forward to seeing where you are this time next year. I have a feeling 2020 is going to be an even bigger year for you.
Oh, yes, sir. Hey, I appreciate you having me on. Thank you.
Our pleasure. There he is, Jeff Neal, joining us. What a win for him. What a performance from him. Some big performances on Saturday night. Like I said, that was one of the best performances, in my opinion. What about Irene Aldana, as I mentioned, knocking out Caitlin Vieira? By far the best performance of her career. Not even close. Knocking out a previously undefeated fighter like that. Amazing. Matt Brown coming back after a 2+ year hiatus with the win over Ben Saunders and having the great Mark Coleman in his corner. That was amazing. Two Ohio guys together. And what about Puna Soriano with a nice win in his UFC debut? So that's the story as far as 245 is concerned. Of course, we'll be talking about it throughout the program. But before we get to our next guest, shall I tell you about our good friends over at Whoop? Why not? Yes. We're all looking for ways to improve our health. I like this music. What is it? What does it signify? What is it symbolic of? Ah, yes. In honor of the South Korean event this weekend. There you go. There's the lineup. Frankie Edgar, Korean Zombie, Volkan Ozdemir against Alexander Rakic. By the way, very important fight. I like the Duho Choi fight as well against Charles Jourdain. Anyway, let me tell you about my good friends over at Whoop. We're all looking for ways to improve our health, whether it's being smarter about how we train, making a better effort to get more sleep, or simply thinking more about our body's overall wellness. Today's sponsor, Whoop, is a fitness tracker that goes beyond counting steps and provides 24/7 fitness, sleep, and recovery insights personalized to you. There's nothing else like it on the market. Our lives cause different levels of stress on our body, from training to work and our lives at home. Whoop understands that and quantifies it for you into actionable metrics. With Whoop, you'll get a daily recovery score that looks at biometrics like heart rate variability, resting heart rate, and your sleep performance to let you know how ready your body is to perform. You're also given insight into the intensity of your training in real time and track how strenuous your day is, as well as get next level sleep insight with suggested sleep times based on how strenuous your day is. Track your sleep stages and cycles and see how much sleep you got compared to how much you actually needed. Whether you're looking to be smarter about your fitness, better about your sleep, or be more mindful of your body's recovery, Whoop has you covered. Don't wait for New Year's resolutions to start being more in tune with your body. If you're looking to be smart about how you train, sleep, or recover, Whoop is offering our audience 15% off with this code, Ariel, A-R-I-E-L. Go to whoop.com, that's W-H-O-O-P.com, and use the code Ariel, A-R-I-E-L, that's me, at checkout, and optimize your performance with Whoop. Support them because they support us. All right. So back to the main event on Saturday. Kamaru Usman, Colby Covington. Great fight. Tremendous fight. In the end, Usman wins via TKO late. 50 seconds left in the fight. The second latest ending in a title fight in the history of the UFC. Number one, of course, Demetrius Johnson, Kyoji Horiguchi, Montreal, UFC 186, with just 1 second left. One man who was in attendance watching it with a very watchful eye is our next guest, Leon Rocky Edwards, kind enough to join us after the long journey home from Las Vegas to the UK. Leon, how are you, my friend?
I'm good, Errol. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for doing this after the long trip home. I know you're probably tired. I appreciate a few minutes of your time. So you were in attendance. You watched it. You were in Las Vegas. What did you make of the fight on Saturday? What were your impressions?
Being there, watching the fight, I thought it was a good fight. It was probably 50-50 leading into the fifth. Both men came out and did what they needed to do. But I think from being at the fight and watching the fight, it gave me more confidence growing in me and knowing that 2020, I'll be a world champion. I'll beat both of them guys. And I just know I've improved so much over the years. And I from being there and seeing it, I know I defeat both of them.
So you weren't impressed?
Not really. It was like a striking match, right? And it's basically two wrestlers in a boxing match. So it'd be hard to be impressed with two wrestlers in a boxing match. But I feel I got every tool in the book to go out there and defeat these guys.
Were you surprised that not one takedown was attempted in that fight?
No, I knew it was going to go into most of striking. I thought they'd probably come out and strike because in wrestlers, they always come out and end up striking each other. I don't know why.
Right.
It always happens. So I feel that was going to happen anyway. I was saying it all week.
So I scored the first two rounds for Colby, the next two for Kamaru, and then, of course, he was on his way to winning the fifth. Did you agree with that?
Yeah, I think it was 2-2 going into the fifth. And whoever won the fifth, we'd probably won the fight. And Kamaru got a stoppage. So I'm happy he went out there and got a stoppage because, like I said, it's a better story for me and him now to fight for the world title. And I never really liked Colby anyway, so it was all good.
Well, one of my big takeaways from the fight, and one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on the show, was I feel like you were actually one of the big winners from Saturday, because I think if Colby would have won, they would have tried to do the Colby Masvidal fight because of the history there. But I think because of your history with Usman, and because I'm not sure if Masvidal wants the Usman fight, I think you might emerge as the next man for Usman. Did you have the same takeaway?
Yeah. 100%. I feel I deserve it even before that. I put the work in and my last 10 fights, I've won 9. As far as Masvidal goes, his last 10 fights, he's won about 5 or 6. So I feel I am the head runner leading up to the fight. So it was good. I'm happy it was the one. Like I said, there's a story behind it. He was the last guy to beat me 8-9 fights ago. And to go out there now and to defeat Usman would be icing on the cake for me.
And I don't know if you heard his post-fight comments, but it seems like Usman actually agrees. Even his manager was saying online that they think that you're next. Did you see these comments? And I don't know, maybe are you surprised by the fact, like, this actually might happen?
Yeah, I'm not surprised. Like I said, I put a working error. I feel I deserve it from 2 fights ago. So I'm glad that they came out and they're not ducking. Like I said, I'll see them in the PI in the weekend. I told him good luck, and I hope we get a victory, and so he did. So I wasn't surprised. I know that Usman wants to fight. Woodley don't want to fight. Usman want to fight, and so it'll be good. It'll be good.
So speaking of Tyron Woodley, have we now shifted our attention away from him? Because it did seem in the last couple of weeks that they were trying to make that fight. You guys have been going back and forth, and maybe there was some talk of England, and he didn't want to go to England. What is going on there? What's happening? Why isn't this fight not happening?
Errol, I don't know. like I said, I want to fight. Dana wants to fight. Everybody wants to fight apart from Woodley. He said he doesn't want to travel. He don't want to come to the UK and fight. I said, okay, cool. I'll come to the US and fight you. You still make another excuse. So my attention now is on Kamaru Usman. He's the world champion. My aim is to be a world champion. And I want to go out there and defeat the last man to defeat me. So my full focus now will be on Kamaru Usman.
So
Woodley's, for some reason, not accepting the fight.
Yeah, so we're dropping the Woodley thing and we're just focusing on I mean, of course, the title is most important, right?
Yeah, the title shot is most important to me. I've been forcing Manny to a fight. I've been pushing this Woodley fight now for weeks and weeks. And so has the UFC been forcing Woodley to try to take the fight, but he just doesn't want to travel and he doesn't want to fight me. So now that Kamaru's agreed that I am next in line, I'm saying I want to be the next in line. So I don't see where what could stop us from fighting next. So I feel that that should be the next fight.
Dana White did also say that Masvidal versus Usman would be a massive fight. Are you worried that they're going to try to go the Masvidal route first, and then if that doesn't work out, come to you as standby, which you've been in that spot before? Does this worry you at all?
Not really. Like I said, I've earned my shot, and I spoke to the UFC, and they're also interested in me stepping in and fighting for the world title.
Oh.
So, like I said, in the last 10 fights, I won 9. He won like 5. 6. So I'm 100% runner in to get the shot. So I spoke with him when I was in Vegas, and they're interested in me stepping in as well.
Okay.
So it'd be good to see what happens.
Because nothing has come easy for you, Leon, as I'm sure you know. So you are confident, though, that this is actually going to happen?
Just the way I like it, I don't want nothing easy, because I've been grinding all my life for where I get to, so I don't want it to come easy now. So it's all good. Like I said, Usman wants it. I want it. And that's the fight that should happen next. I am ready to be a world champion in 2020, and I'm looking forward to it. I remember I was watching the fight earlier, and then after, it was like hugging his mom in the cage, and I was looking for, I need that moment. That's why I'm going to be a world champion, and then it's going to happen.
And when you're watching Usman fight live all these years later after you fought him, do you feel like he has improved a lot since your fight against him? Do you think he's a different fighter from that one a couple of years back?
Yeah, he's improved. He's improved. His striking's improved. His shots are pretty basic. It's that basic selection of shots he's got, but he's improved in his striking, if you know what I mean. But so have I. I've improved leaps and bounds. Since fighting Usman, I'm like a total different fighter from what we were fighting. So I just cannot see how he beat me next time. I am young and confident. I'm on an 8-fight win streak, and I just can't see how he beats me.
When's the last time you watched that fight that you guys had?
I haven't watched it since. I don't like looking back on like losses and shit. I just keep looking. I watch the fights like once or twice, even the win.
Really?
Like once or twice, and then, I'm like back on to the what's next. I'm like, what's next? So, I don't really watch my fights that much, to be honest with you.
Wow. Not even the ones that, like, you do great in? Like, you don't want to just sit back and enjoy your work?
Never. I'm like, once, twice, max, if I watch my fights. I don't really like watch my fights that much. I'm chasing the next, what's next, and getting better. I never really think about my last couple of fights, or my losses and my wins. I just keep improving and keep working and try and get.
Have you ever watched the Usman fight back in 2015?
When I first lost to him,
okay.
I watched it back constantly, but then I thought, let it go and just keep working. But I watch it now for like three, four years.
Okay. And did you go to Las Vegas because of that? Like, did you just decide to go on your own because you wanted to be there for the fight, or was there another reason? Because sometimes, you know, we don't see you at these American shows, especially so far away from England.
Yeah. No, I wanted to be at the fight. So, I wanted to see just to see them fight in person, and just see the skill set and the way they move, the way they breathe in the minute rest. I also want to see everything they're doing, you know what I mean? So I went there to also go to the PR as well, get some training in done, and then go to the fight. So it was good. It was a good trip. It was worth my trip, and I'm just looking forward to 2020.
Yeah, very smart on your part. I think it always helps when you're sitting there, you know, cage side or at least close by, and you get tied to the fight itself. People, you know, the shots of you sitting there, I think that's very smart. Could I ask you, like, in your mind, like, what is the key to defeating Kamaru Usman? When you watch him fight, how do you beat this guy? Because, you know, only four, I don't know if you know this, he's only the fourth person in UFC history to start his UFC career 11-0. The others, Royce Gracie, Anderson Silva, Khabib Nurmagomedov. He's now the fourth, 11-0. How do you beat this man?
I've got many ways to beat him. Especially for watching him Saturday night, I got many ways to beat him, and I've been dwelling on that loss since we last fought. And I went over many game plans in my head and how I could have beat him then, but now I know how I can beat him now. But I won't say now I ain't gonna and do shit. So I know how I can win that fight. And I got like 2-3 ways I can win that fight. And I'm just looking forward to getting the fight done and getting in there.
Okay, when do you think it happens?
It's just 40, so probably May, probably April, May. It depends, up to him. I'm ready to go. Like, I ain't fought since July, which is a long layoff, right?
Yeah.
I'm young and fit, so it's a long layoff, but if they give me the shot, I'll wait it out, and I'll wait for that shot. So hopefully, like, April, May, probably. Depends on Usman.
Okay, you're ready to go. One last thing before I let you go. What's next for your brother, Fabian? Had that grudge match with Mike Shipman a couple weeks back. What's next for him? Do you know?
I think we're going to find it on the Dublin card in February.
Okay.
Just keep working. He's not a no-now thinking. He's still young in the sport. He's only been doing MMA now for 4 years. So he's still a young man in the sport and he's still learning his trading. I can see him being a world champion as well in 2020.
Yeah, could be a huge year for the Edwards brothers. We could be talking about both of you at the end of the year as one of the best stories of 2020 with both of you winning titles in your respective divisions. Well, hopefully for your sake, you get that fight, Leon. You've been doing everything asked of you, and I thought it was interesting to hear Masvidal actually single you out as the potential next guy for him. So let's see how it all turns out. I appreciate you doing this, my man. Thank you very much, and good luck in trying to get that fight.
Thank you, brother. Thank you.
All right, there he is. Leon Rocky Edwards, 18-3 overall, 10-2 in the UFC. Last fight, of course, big win over Rafael Dos Anjos in July, won via unanimous decision. Remember, I called him the Tim Duncan of the UFC, which pissed everyone off. 8-fight UFC winning streak, by the way. Second longest active streak in the welterweight division behind Kamaru Usman's 11. And as you can see, the plus 96 significant strike differential during that 8-fight winning streak. Very impressive. 10 UFC wins, third most among English fighters behind Michael Bisping with 20, of course, and Ross Pearson with 12. And I'm wondering what the people are saying. Can we get some early insight? Maybe I can look it up myself.
Yes, you can.
Oh, you got it.
Yes, I do.
What are they saying as far as our poll is concerned?
So far, we have just over 17,000 votes.
And already?
Yes, already. And
by the way, are you on the air right now, or do I have to repeat what you're saying?
I'm on the air.
Oh, okay.
Cool. Right now, Jorge Masvidal with leading with 65% of the vote.
Huh.
Leon Edwards, 24%. Tyron Woodley, 6%. And then last, Conor McGregor with 5%.
I knew that was going to happen. But by the way, I feel like people are picking with their heart as opposed to their mind. Again, stressing the word who will, not who should, right? Because I think a lot of people think, okay, Masvidal's year, high-profile wins, the win over Askren. You could make a very strong case that he's the number one contender. There's no doubt about that. But I don't know if he wants the Usman fight. And not because he's ducking. I'll put it this way. I think Jorge Masvidal is more interested in the Khabib Nurmagomedov title fight than the Usman fight. I just don't think he thinks that Usman is a big draw and doesn't want to really fight him because he doesn't feel like it's a high-profile fight after the Askren fight, Till in England, and then, of course, the most recent fight against Nathan Diaz. I'm really curious to see. I think the UFC is going to try to push it. That's why I was a little surprised that Edwards feels that confident, which is good for him. Very hard to deny the fact that this man deserves it. Like, from a merit standpoint, Leon Edwards deserves it. And it would be, you know, nice little thing for him after what happened in England, you know, the incident backstage. All right, in the end, he gets a title shot. Cool. But there's a real scenario that can play out where Masvidal just decides to get the Conor fight. If Conor wins on January 18th, I think everyone, including Usman, would admit that Conor's bigger than any title. So hard to begrudge someone like Masvidal for deciding to go that route as opposed to the title route. And then Edwards gets his title shot. And everyone's happy. That could happen. And maybe after, you know, if Masvidal then fights Conor, then you could say, okay, maybe then he'll go for the belt. But it's going to be really interesting to see how that's going to play out. And I'm really interested also to see how the Colby Covington situation plays out, because I would argue, for Colby Covington, if he had to lose, that was actually the best case scenario. Why? Little controversial. Like, I know he was upset that, you know, they didn't let him go out on a shield. They didn't get knocked out, right? I know he was upset about that. But if you get knocked out clean, there's no real wiggle room there, right? If you lose like that, and what's the heel move to do after a loss like that? Blame the refs, blame Usman for faking this and that. Now you're right back on track. People used to say this about Chael Sonnen all the time. Oh, he talked all that smack. There's no way he could come back. He came back every time. He was able to spin it. I have no doubt in my mind Colby's going to spin this. He's going to say Mark Goddard screwed him. He's going to say Usman faked. He's going to say he wasn't really out. They shouldn't let him, you know, keep fighting. 50 seconds left. He was going to turn things around. For the heel character, that was actually the best case scenario. If he had to lose, that was the best way possible. Like, if you think that he's just going to go back to being Colby Covington circa 2016, just this sort of, you know, vanilla wrestler guy who doesn't rock the boat, you're out of your mind. He's going to actually dial it up more. I've no, literally seconds after the fight, he goes on Instagram and Twitter and starts talking like that. We have not seen the last of that man. That's for sure. So don't celebrate just yet. All right. Let's move along now to our next guest. Had a big win on Saturday against Viviane Araújo. She was a plus 160 betting underdog. She was able to rebound from her title fight loss back in June. She is Jessica Ai, who is kind enough to join us right now. Jessica, how are you?
I'm good. How are you, Ariel?
I'm doing really well. Thank you for joining us and congratulations on the win. Of course, I have to talk about the day before the fight and the weigh-ins. I know you were very upset about how that turned out. Could we start there? What happened there with the weight cut? First time in your career that you missed weight.
Yeah, it's definitely a first time for me. It was embarrassing, obviously. You never like to miss weight. We were in communications with Ali and her camp the entire time. Unfortunately, we miscalculated my water load, and unfortunately, I'm a female, and my period happened this week, and it just was a recipe for disaster. Instead of compromising the fight, I contacted them and, you know, wanted to make things as right as I possibly could, you know, and I forfeited up about 15 grand of my own money to make sure the fight happened, you know, for everybody. I mean, it sucks. Because now, you know, people are just going after me and saying all these things. And, you know, it really sucks. But, I mean, I feel like I did a great job of putting things behind me and just going back to the fight.
At what point did you realize that this was going to be a problem, that you would have a lot of, you know, a lot of trouble making weight? At what point in the whole process?
Well, it really was once we got to the PI in the morning and we started going into the cut. We got about a pound off, and then my body just started to completely stop sweating. It was not letting go of water, and my body was just getting hot. And I think a lot of the when you know that your body's going to hold water, you know how the weight cut instantly changes. I mean, I think a lot of fighters can relate, you know, to that. When your body stops, it stops. That's it. There's no more. And it was probably about like 9 o'clock, and I wanted again to be 100% transparent and, you know, talk with the camp and, you know, offer her everything that I did.
And to show up, you know, like that moment there, we just saw, you know, you're putting your thumbs down. That's a tough moment, right? To know that it's not like you're a pound off and everyone's looking at you and then the scrutiny that comes afterwards. What's going through your mind as you have to actually step on that scale?
It stings so bad because this, you know, industry is so cutthroat and like, you can't have a bad moment. You can't make a mistake. You can't slip on the banana peel because they just treat you like crap. And I think it's apparent we can see in the video, I didn't come out of shape. Probably one of the best shape I've ever felt in my life. I mean, Bo Sandoval, I mean, Clint, Charles, everybody at the PI was just incredible. You know, to me the entire time going up to it. And, you know, again, I was 100% in communications with them. We knew what was happening. And, you know, I accepted it. I wasn't going to compromise the fight for not only for her, but she came all the way from Brazil. And again, I paid her, you know what I mean? She gets my money. She gets a piece of my earnings. I mean, I feel like they pay us to make weight. They want to see us have fun while we fight. So that's why they took my show money.
And of course, people weighing in afterwards, we saw the tweet there from Sajara Eubanks. What did you make of that?
That girl is just a terrible human being. I don't have any comment on her. I'm not going to give her any of my light of time right now with you and having such a great platform to talk about my life we're not talking about starch. She's irrelevant.
Okay.
She always will be.
Fair enough. Do you know how much you weighed on fight night? Like, did you check?
I was 141. I was no heavier than I normally am at 125. I actually, the last fight when I fought Valentina, I was 45.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, I didn't weigh any more than I normally did. You know what I mean? I barely could even eat on Friday night. I felt so terrible. It was one of the worst experiences. You know, I know the light I'm given in life to be able to, the platform I'm given. And anytime I'm unprofessional, my coaches were mad at me. I mean, it wasn't a good thing in that regard. I'm not proud of it. You know what I mean? I'm proud of my win. I'm proud of my showcase things, right? Because we didn't go out there and just like, it wasn't, you know, like I didn't showcase my kicks, my abilities and show all the things that I've been working on that I said that I've been doing. Because I wanted to showcase a skill change in me, you know, between moving, coming to the PI, you know, changing camps. Like I wanted to show that I'm really trying to be a better fighter. And isn't that what it's about? Is every single time they see a better level of us?
I will be honest, you know, I've been covering this sport a very long time, and you're certainly not the first female fighter to say that, you know, for, you know, health related reasons, you had a hard time making weight. It's just kind of the luck of the draw. I'm wondering if this has happened to you before and you've been able to overcome, because like I said, you've never missed weight before, but you've been doing this for a very long time. Have you ever been put in this position before?
So one of the things that we did a little bit different is water loading. I'm new to water loading. I never used to do it. I think that my body wasn't quite ready for it, for that weight cut. So no, I don't foresee this ever being a problem. Again, you know, we're going to work really hard. I'm going to utilize my resources being with the PI and talk with them about it. I'm going in later today to get a workout in and again, make sure I never have this problem again, because I do eventually want to work my way back to the title. And I never want this to happen again. I try to let every time I make a mistake be my learning lesson. So, you know, I think that one of the things I said post-fight is I feel like I'm not the only person to miss. And I feel like the only thing that I can, you know, kind of be okay with is that I know other great fighters in this sport have also suffered, you know, this same type of defeat. So I want to make sure that I'm not too hard on myself, that it's not like this isn't something that I'm the only person that has ever done this.
So would it be fair to say you're going to stick around at 125?
Oh God. Yeah. That's the perfect weight class for me. I think that we see that and, you know, it's always where I'm supposed to be. I don't walk that heavy. You know what I mean? I'm not that big of a girl. Like, I miscalculated something. I made a terrible mistake and I paid $15,000 for it. So
after the win, very quickly after the win, Joanne Calderwood was tweeting about you. Seems like she's interested in that fight. Are you interested in it?
Yeah, I mean, whatever, you know, Mick and, you know, Dana want to do. I feel bad that, again, I had to apologize to them for what had happened. But I'd like to see what happens with the winner of Caitlin and Valentina before we make that decision. But if it's me and JoJo, it's me and JoJo. I feel like she's been kind of barking at me when I see her at the PI. We have a fun little interaction always. I think she's a, you know, she's a great girl for the sport. I think we've always kind of went back and forth. And look, I fight because it's fun, and I know the fans love it. I mean, if that's the fight that the fans want to see and the UFC wants to see, then again, I'll do it. You know, I mean, hopefully if they make sure that happens, I can do it back in Columbus, Ohio.
Oh, you like that? March 28th?
Yeah, I mean, it'd be nice. It's so close. It's 2 hours from Cleveland, so that one would be sweet. But, you know, whatever the UFC decides, if they're like, hey, let's hold back, we'll wait to see what happens with the title fight, you know, and then we get back there, or I fight JoJo. You know what I mean? I'm open for all kinds of ideas.
Do you train?
I'm not a picky fighter. I feel like I've always said that. I'm not a picky fighter.
So are you, like, training right next to her at the PI? Because I know she spends a lot of time there as well.
We never train next to each other, but it's kind of cool. You know, like I see her in the PT room, you know, she might have her phone in her hand and there's normal conversation about life stuff and I'll chime in and she'll chime in. I mean, her boyfriend and coach John Wood is there all the time. Her manager's there all the time. I mean, it is what it is. I feel like I quit caring about what people possibly could know about me. I mean, what secrets do we all have in this sport? What, that we're all tough? We're all working hard. Like, I mean, it's all about practical application on fight night. If you can't stop it on fight night, it doesn't matter how much you try to warn yourself pre-up to it. So I don't mind seeing her, but yeah, we're around each other all the time.
And
she looks in really great shape too right now. She does. I think it's funny because she said, don't go eat ice cream and afterwards and stuff like that. So, I mean, I'm sure I'm going to go into the PI here in just a little bit. I'll probably see her and John.
Yes, I saw that little zinger. For you, of course, the last time we saw you was back in Chicago and you lost to Valentina, and it was a brutal knockout. It was tough to watch, right? I mean, it was just one of the more clean head kick knockouts that you'll ever see. How long did it take for you to get over that and to get back on the horse and start thinking about the comeback, considering the knockout itself, but also the stakes, right? You were fighting for your first UFC title.
Yeah. You know, everybody tells me like, it's such a brutal knockout. It's so crazy. It's so crazy. I feel like being a female, you know, the way that females get knocked out, it makes it seem a little worse than what it really is, but it was a clean knockout. It was perfect. Valentina did incredible. I have seen her since. We have hugged it out. We've talked in the bathroom. It's very competitive nature in it, but I didn't go out there and I wasn't getting beat up. I think that that's a testament to myself. I think that a lot of things were happening going into the title fight. I had moved. I had a really bad back injury, and I want to put deuces up to all the people that are going to be like, oh, it's an excuse. It's not an excuse. It's the truth. I had 6 herniations in my back leading up to that fight. I did everything I possibly could to make sure I was healthy. And I went into that fight risking the fact that I wasn't going to be myself. And going into the fight, I was throwing some of the techniques. I was throwing these crazy right hands that weren't close enough. And, you know, Valentina was able to time that with an incredible head kick. So I'm proud of her. She did a great job. She did exactly what she said she did with me. She studied her opponent. She seen that I love my right hand and throwing my overhand right. And she timed it and kicked me with it. It was incredible. But let's go back to the fact that it wasn't a 5-round pummeling. There was a lot of things in the fight that I wasn't doing that weren't my normal self, and I want to be able to showcase it. So, I mean, I guess really at this point, I just have to wait and see what the UFC wants to do, and, you know, we'll kind of go from there.
Did you take time off after the fight?
No, I went, well, I mean, yes and no. I mean, I had the herniation, so we had to go through crazy rehab. The UFC basically asked me like, hey, look, we have 2 options. You can get back surgery or you can do a rehab program. So Heather and Heather at the PI and Bo Sandoval basically were like, hey, give us a chance. Let's go back. Let's do, you know, a 6-week rehab, reassess, and then see where we're at. And we had hiccups right before my birthday. You know, we threw my back out in the middle of training. So really, we were originally offered this fight in October, but my back was still kind of on the edge. And it wasn't until about October that my back finally turned over. We were able to put all that time together, and Bo and Heather were both like, I think you're good, girl. I think we're right on track. And, you know, we went into this camp with no back injury at all. I mean, 0 back injury. I mean, the herniations are never not going to be there. I always have to manage them. But they were pretty bad. I mean, they were really bad going into the Valentina fight. And it was definitely, the first time I think I ever decided to take a fight because I knew that I could rebuild no matter the outcome of the fight. And I really needed the money.
Do you feel comfortable in Vegas now? You had the big life change, right? Leaving Ohio, coming to Vegas, changing everything around you. Do you feel like this is home? Do you feel like you're comfortable there?
Yeah, I do. I finally feel at home. I feel like my feet are grounded, and I feel like some really cool new things have been happening with me, and some new things that I have on the horizon that being out west has actually gave me. I got to see the opportunities and things that are going to be coming up very soon here in the spring, and it's exciting to be on this kind of side of the world. I think I'm putting myself in a position not only be a better fighter by utilizing the UFC Performance Institute, but also being so close to California where there's a lot of jobs in both the MMA industry as well as the TV industry. So I'm kind of excited to
Can you give us
everybody.
A hint? What are we talking about?
You know, I mean, we're going to be a really good dancer. You guys maybe get to see me dance live on TV.
What? So, like the dancing show?
I mean, we'll see. I'm not going to put too much out there, but, you know.
Whoa.
I mean, I'm not a very good twerker, but I think I'm a good slow dancer.
Wow. How did this happen?
Well, I think a lot of people have seen that I had originally signed with Paradigm, which is, you know, formerly known as like Audi, and those guys. We decided we weren't a really good fit after the Valentina fight, and those those guys are incredible. But just what I'm looking for in the sense of management, I'm looking more for people in the movie industry, the television industry, more of, you know, someone, an agent in that regard. And I found myself an incredible agent. Their name is Jeff and Jennifer. They work with a brand called Octagon. I think it's actually WME's number one competitor.
Oh, nice.
But I most recently signed with them. I went up to Beverly Hills and signed with them, and we've got some really fun things on the horizon.
Wow. Okay. That's very, I mean, good for you. Well done. And I think people might think Octagon is like an MMA agency. It has nothing to do. I think it's with a K, right? That they spell it. Right.
Sure. They're actually big with ESPN.
Oh.
Are they one of your bosses?
No, they are not. But maybe you could put in a good word for me.
I might have to do that.
All right. Well, I'm very happy for you, Jessica. Well done. I know you were very upset about the weight cut and how that all, you know, played out, but you got the victory. You had to give up your purse, and she accepted the fight. So that's just the way the sport goes sometimes. And looking forward to seeing what you do next year in and out of the cage as well. After all the changes of this past year, always great to have you on the show. Thank you for doing it, Jessica.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. We'll talk soon.
All right. There she is, Jessica Evil Eye, joining us right now via the Magic of Skype. Big win for her over Viviane Araújo, getting back on track after the loss to Valentina Shevchenko. Remember, she beat Kaylin Chookagian, who's fighting for the belt on February 8th, back in December of last year in Toronto. So she will be watching that fight, of course. But I like the Calderwood fight. I like it. And Calderwood with the little ice cream zinger on Twitter after the fight. Okay, in a matter of seconds, we'll talk to another women's MMA star. But before we get to her, let me tell you about what's going on December 31st here in New York. Well, not technically here in New York. That's an old habit of mine. Around 2 hours from here in New York. We're in Bristol right now, Bristol, Connecticut. But in New York City at the Madison Square Garden Theater, the Hulu Theater, the 2019 Professional Fighters League season concludes with 6 world title fights, their biggest event of the year. It's the PFL Championship, New Year's Eve, New York City, Madison Square Garden, 6 $1 million belts on the line. Who will be the 6 PFL champions crown? It will be a rematch between Kayla Harrison and Larissa Pacheco with $1 million and the world championship on the line. Huge. The ball doesn't drop until the PFL belts are raised. Don't miss the biggest night for PFL action this year. The action starts at 7 p.m. Eastern. Watch it only on ESPN2. There's the lineup right over there. And let's talk now to the face of PFL, the one and only Kayla Harrison, who will be fighting against Larissa Pacheco for that $1 million and the belt. Kayla, how are you?
I'm good. How are you, Ariel?
Long time no speak, Kayla. Where have you been?
I've been staying busy. Yes. Hungry,
well, you have a big opportunity. You had a great year so far. Is there a part of you that's a little disappointed it's not Sarah Kaufman after all the hullabaloo at the beginning of the season? Are you a little let down by that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm let down, but I'm not surprised. You know, I feel like she was so focused on me that she overlooked Larissa a little bit. And I know from experience that that's not a good idea to do. So definitely disappointed, but I fight whoever steps across the cage for me, and that's all I can do is my job.
Is it a bit of a blessing, maybe, that you're fighting someone that you beat already, that you know how she fights? It's not a surprise?
I mean, I guess you could look at it that way. I really, you know, my goal is to be the best fighter I can be, so I always want to challenge myself and push myself by fighting new opponents. So I'm a little bit disappointed just from that aspect of it, but yeah, I know how Larissa fights. I know what she brings to the table, and she's got a long night ahead of her on New Year's Eve.
I like the storyline here because I was at that fight when you fought her back in May on Long Island, Larissa Pacheco. And I'll never forget, I've never seen this before, someone winning in that dominant fashion. It was that one-sided, yet you were the one crying after the fight. You weren't just crying, you were bawling. You were so upset that it went the distance. And I think it just speaks to your character and how much you want to win and how tough you are on yourself. But now here you have an opportunity to come back in the finals and beat her up again. In a way, were you happy that it ended up beating her because you want to almost kind of like right the wrong of that fight? I know that fight wasn't a wrong. You just put so much pressure on yourself, but to just prove that you are that much better than her?
Yeah. I mean, now that some time's passed and I've, you know, had a chance to settle into my emotions after the fight, you know, I did win in a dominant fashion. I'm never satisfied unless I get a really instill my will of victory, where it's a knockout, a TKO, or a submission. So I wasn't happy with the win. That's just who I am as a person. You know, I expect nothing but excellence from myself, and that's why I'm able to compete at such a high level. But the Kayla that beat her in May would get eaten alive by the Kayla I am today. So I'm excited for it. I think it's going to be fireworks, no pun intended.
Oh, yes, because of New Year's Eve and New York and all that stuff. I get it. In hindsight, though, like, can you admit that maybe you were too hard on yourself, like that you didn't have to react that way?
No.
No?
I don't really make any apologies for expecting excellence from myself. You know, I'm my own toughest critic, and I think the biggest mistake I made was doing it in front of people.
Okay. Does that happen often to you?
It's different in MMA. In judo, you know, you win, you lose, you go in the back, you cry, or you celebrate, and no one really gives a shit. So being interviewed right after a fight, being in the cage, having those emotions running high, it's different for me, and I'm still learning. I'm still growing as a fighter and as a person. I don't make any apologies for being hard on myself. I think that's what separates me from the rest. And next time I'll just do it in private.
So that's common for you. Even after dominant judo victories, you have reacted that way as well?
Yeah. I mean, that comes from my coaches, you know, Big Jim and Jay always, they were never really satisfied. I mean, I won the world championships and I went in the back and Big Jim was yelling at me.
Wow.
It just comes from years of expecting more from myself as an athlete, as a person, inside the cage, outside the cage. But I think that's, like I said, it's what makes me special.
You recently re-signed with PFL as well. Why did you do that?
Because I love them.
Okay. Good reason.
I mean, the PFL has been with me from day one. You know, they took a chance on me, and not only that, but they're a company that I believe in. You know, it's not about how much trash you talk, and it's not about how pretty you are. It's literally in your hands. Your destiny is in your hands. And if you want money, win. If you want to be successful, win. That's really it. And they made me an offer I couldn't refuse.
Okay. Did you even, you know, test the waters at all, or did it not come to that?
I mean, there were other, you know, I don't think legally I was allowed to talk to other companies because my contract wasn't up, but there were rumors and murmurs going around. Ultimately, it just is the best fit for me. You know, I'm only six fights in. I get to fight another four times next year. I get to build a ton of experience at a very fast rate. And I get to do it under a banner that I 100% support.
And is it for just next year? Like, how does that work with their contract? Yeah. So it goes year by year?
Yep, just a one-year deal.
And will that be 155 for you next year, or are you going to go down to 145?
155.
Okay. No consideration to go down to 145.
I mean, there's no need at this point. I've been pretty vocal about how I feel about cutting weight. I don't think it's healthy. I think it's super dangerous, especially in the sport that we do. You know, you have these fighters who are dehydrating their bodies of 30 pounds of weight and water weight. And what protects your brain is water. So you dehydrate your body and then you step in a cage 24 hours later and expect your body to be healthy and safe. I don't think it's healthy at all. I don't believe in it. I've never cut weight. And I don't think it's a good message to send to young kids.
Are you concerned at all that there just aren't a lot of 155ers out there that are good, that will test you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little bit concerned about it, but realistically, a lot of the girls that fight 145 way more than me. So I hope that we kind of start to change the game and they realize that there are more weight classes and you can fight at a healthier weight and have a healthier lifestyle. You know, that's my goal. Not just for me, but for everyone.
And so the team that you are repping today on your shirt, American Top Team, you're a very proud member of the team. They can claim to have the best 155.
I'm not a proud member. I'm the team captain.
Are you really? I didn't know that.
Everybody knows that.
Oh, my bad. Well, it's been a while since we last talked, Kayla. I apologize. When did that happen? What was that?
Self-proclaimed team captain.
Oh, wait. Did they actually vote on this, or did you just deny it yourself?
No, but I mean, you know, there's all these guys who are talking about how their team captain is good or that, and I mean, I'm the one that's in the gym every day, twice a day. I'm the one that's, you know, keeping the troops rallied. I'm the one that's winning the ATT Fantasy League right now.
Oh, my gosh.
First female ever invited. I'm in the finals. I'm a stud. So I'm team captain.
Okay, so as team captain, sometimes you have to, you know, you have to answer the tough questions. Could I ask you what your take is on Colby Covington and what's happened with him and Masvidal and Joanna? No, I mean, but you are team captain, so I feel like you're the perfect person to talk about this. How do you feel about what's happening?
My role as team captain is to keep the peace. Not only am I team captain, but I would say I'm Miss Congeniality. You know, I get along with everybody at the gym. I have no enemies. I think it's sad what's happened between Masvidal and Colby, and I like them both. They've both been nothing but nice to me and supportive and helpful. I think it's a shame. I don't know what else to say about that. I think it's a shame.
Is there tension within the gym?
I mean, there was kind of at the beginning, but it died down pretty quickly. People sort of blew it up out of proportion.
Are you worried that it's going to create some more issues, divisiveness? You know, like Poirier has said, next time I see you, there's going to be problems. Masvidal continues to tweet about him. Like, are you worried that this is going to be bad for a very tight-knit team?
Not really. I think that Dan does a good job of, you know, hey, we're all fighters. We all fight. A lot of us fight in the same weight class. We all train together. And at the end of the day, we all represent ATT, and that's the most important thing. So if you respect this gym and you respect what we stand for, then you're not going to allow personal emotions to get in the way of that. You know, we're all professionals. It's nothing personal in the gym. It's just business. And I expect all of them to handle themselves accordingly or hold themselves accordingly.
Right. And by the way, your teammate, Amanda Nunes, had a great performance on Saturday. But you know what was interesting? Clarissa Shields, the two-time Olympian who's tried to get a fight with her, is in attendance talking about this fight. What's that?
Two-time Olympic champion.
Yep, two-time
Olympic champion.
Yep. Right. My apologies. I'm sorry. But she's never gone lower than 155. I kind of feel like you versus her is a lot more realistic. She can't make 145, and we got the two Olympic gold medalists going up against each other. I feel like this is a very marketable fight. I'm not trying to get you to steal Amanda's.
Yeah, like one's a grappler, one's a striker. Yeah.
What do you think?
Very exciting. I mean, I've known Clarissa since the 2012 Olympics. You know, she's my homegirl. But like I said before, it's nothing personal. It's just business. So if that happens, it happens. And we'll handle ourselves professionally. And we'll go in there and put on a great show. And then I think we'll be woman enough to be friends afterwards.
Yeah, I feel like that's a lot more realistic. Do you, by the way, spar with Amanda?
We haven't really this. We didn't really this camp. She's fighting, she fought, Geronimi, who's much more of a striker than me. So I wasn't exactly the best look.
Right.
For her.
But I'm sure being at the gym as she's preparing for a title fight, just seeing the female goat, if you will, has to inspire you, right?
That's one of the reasons I moved here, you know?
Right.
If you want to be great, train with the best. You want to be the best, you got to train with the best. And, she inspires me every day. You know, there's a picture on the wall at ATT of her knocking out Ronda, and I look at that picture every day and I'm reminded and humbled about why I'm there. And she's not only is she just such a great person, she's a great champion, and I definitely look up to her a lot.
Kayla, great to talk to you again. Congrats on a great year. Good luck to you on December 31st against Larissa Pacheco. Goes down on ESPN2. The final event of the decade, the final MMA event of the decade, is the PFL Championship. How about that? And it will end with you. Amazing. What a story. Good luck to you. Thanks for doing this.
Ariel.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. There she is, Kayla Harrison, the two-time Olympic gold medalist in judo. Goes for that PFL championship and the $1 million on December 31st. All right, now let's start our little in-studio party here. First things first, perhaps the nicest human being in the history of mixed martial arts is joining us in studio, the one and only Wonderboy Thompson. Let me hug you.
Yeah, get over here.
Let me hug you.
Yes.
Oh, wow. What a nice hug that was. What a pleasure this is to have Wonderboy, who came all the way from South Carolina this morning.
South Carolina.
That's what how
was
we
the
saved.
What was the journey like to ESPN?
It was easy. I slept the entire way.
Okay.
It was about 2 hours, you know.
Yeah.
Flew from South Carolina to Charlotte, Charlotte to here, man.
Okay. Is this your first time at ESPN?
Actually, it is my third time.
Third time.
So for the first Woodley fight and second Woodley fight.
Okay. I thought it was special. I got you to come for the first time. Well, this is old hat for you.
This is my first time with you.
Yes. In studio.
Live, in studio,
yes.
On the show.
This is a big deal.
It is. It is a big deal for
me. Do you
want to
bring the microphone a little closer to you there?
Gotcha.
There we go.
Oh, it moves. Okay.
Yeah, yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Okay, my
bad. It's mobile. First things first, this is the number one question I got when I told people you were going to be on. How are the hands?
Hands are healing up nicely.
Are they still broken?
They are broken.
Both of them.
I fractured the ring finger here on my left hand and my index finger on my right hand. So I kind of shoved the knuckle back into itself. Which I don't need surgery, which is good news.
Okay.
But they gave me 6 to 8 weeks before I can start hitting or lifting anything. So right now I'm just kind of staying active by, you know, doing some shadow boxing, doing some teaching, a lot of kicking, but nothing with my hands yet.
Wow. Now, can you like even hold something? Like if you want to eat a sandwich, can you do that?
I can do that.
Okay.
The only thing I have a problem with right now is I have the habit of shaking people's hands.
Oh no.
And forget about, forget that my hands are still broken.
That's why you wanted to hug me.
I wanted to hug you because it's you.
I appreciate
okay?
it.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
But, yeah, man, I start breaking out into immediate sweat every time I shake somebody's hand.
Really?
But it's just a habit I have, yeah.
So I saw that you recently launched your own YouTube page.
Yes.
Well done.
Thank you.
The address again?
It's just, Stephen Wonderboy Thompson.
Okay.
And,
you're doing exercises. Without using your hands.
Yes.
This is fascinating. I was watching them last night. I was like, oh my gosh.
We had
some of this stuff
Tuesday.
Is really tough. But you're like, you're almost like grabbing onto a medicine ball, but you're not like fully clutching it.
Right. We're not really fully clutching. I mean, the only time I actually had to sacrifice my hands was when we had an extreme dodgeball tournament that we did at the school that we filmed. And of course, I sacrificed the pain to smoke these kids with a dodgeball.
Really?
So they wanted
That's
me out there,
hurt,
man.
Right? Because you have to actually.
Oh yeah, it was killing me. But yeah, we have a Technique Tuesday every Tuesday, which I told everybody they're begging me for the sidekick video. So I told them once we got to 100,000 subscribers, which we had four weeks ago, that I was going to give them a sidekick video. So it comes out tomorrow, 2 o'clock. So check
you
it out if
it.
You can. Yeah.
And I got to say, production quality on these videos is very high level.
You think so?
This? Yes.
Dude.
I was impressed.
To be honest with you, me and my brother Tony, who's on it, we're winging it right now. He's doing all the editing, the filming.
Wow.
He's doing everything. And this is something we just wanted to do for the fun of it. You know, I didn't know it was going to be, you know, as big as it is, but you know, it's growing. And I didn't realize there was a lot of people out there wanting to know about my style and how I do things, which is pretty cool. And everybody's wondering, hey, you know, can't your fighters study this? I mean, obviously, you might have guys look at it, but it's different when you're stepping out there in the octagon and facing off against them. You can watch me do sidekicks all day, but how I set it up and the application of it is definitely different when you're out there in the octagon.
Also, you appeal to many different people, right? You appeal to the MMA fan, but you also appeal to like the kid who's interested in karate, the dad, the mom, right?
Yes.
You have that appeal. So I feel like a YouTube channel like yours, a lot of fighters have, but yours is very, very smart. I'm actually surprised you didn't do this earlier because you appeal to the young kids, the MMA fan who's just a fan of yours, everyone in between is brilliant.
That's what we try to hit. That's what we try to hit. You know, I mean, you know, I remember back in the 80s and early 90s, like karate was the thing. It was, you know, you had the Ninja Turtles out, you had the Power Rangers, and somewhere along the line, it just wasn't cool anymore, you know? But people gotta realize it, you know, it's cool. The martial arts, karate, you know, MMA, kickboxing, whatever it is, it's awesome, you know? So get out there, do it, learn it, study it. And the martial arts has done a lot for me, you know? Not growing up, not just as a martial artist, but as a man, you know, and I want to give that back. And a lot of the things that you learn in the martial arts, you don't get in other sports. Or a lot of these kids aren't getting at home. So, you know, I want to give that back.
The name of the school is Upstate
Karate.
Karate, right?
Or Team Pitch Black is our competitive team. Simpsonville, South Carolina.
And when did it open? When did
it first open
the school?
We opened in 1983, the year I was born.
Wow, your dad opened it.
My dad opened
it. Ray Thompson.
Yep.
And he was a lifelong martial artist.
He was. And it was actually, he started the martial art. He went to military school.
Okay.
His dad sent him to military school. And he was a big Elvis fan. If it wasn't for Elvis, I don't know what I would be. I'd probably be a break dancer or something
right
now.
Wow.
But, Elvis, my dad couldn't sing like Elvis, couldn't dance like Elvis Presley. So he was like, you know what? He did some of his karate moves in some of his movies, did a little bit on stage. So that's how my dad got into martial arts, was, really? Was Elvis Presley.
Wait, yeah. So he was such a fan of Elvis, couldn't sing, but liked to gyrate, if you will, and that's how he got into martial arts? Yeah. It wasn't like Bruce Lee or something like that?
I'll have to get him on here to tell you the story. But so Elvis was a black belt.
Yes.
Probably supposedly. a celebrity black belt. But he did a lot of his martial arts in some of his old Western films that he did, you know, my dad watched growing up. So, and he would do some of the stuff on stage. I don't know what he did, but on stage, and he wanted to be a martial artist, wanted to do karate, like be like Elvis Presley.
Did he compete, your dad?
He did. He fought back in the '70s and eighties, fought kickboxing. He fought in one of the first, no holds bar, fights.
Really?
In the U.S. It was in 83. No rules. You could kick to the groin, take down. You had wrestlers, kickboxers. This was in Greenville, South Carolina. Yeah.
Really?
And we got a picture of him. I have a picture of him up in the air, getting ready to, I mean, the camera's up. Like, it was in a ring, old school boxing ring, and his foot up, getting ready to stomp this dude's head. Like,
oh my.
I'm thinking, Dad, you probably could have killed this guy. He's like, yeah, he lived, but he said he had to do what he had to do. He had to pay rent.
Wow.
So he ran the school. It was 83. You know, back in those days, you know, those days, like it was that long ago.
I mean,
you know?
It was like 30, what is it, 36 years ago?
Yeah, I guess it was, yeah. I mean, back in those days.
Yeah. We're old now. Yeah. I mean, you're older than you.
I know. Wait, how old are you?
37.
I'll be 37 in February. When's your birthday?
38 in July. So just a little bit older.
Just a little bit older. Yeah. Than me. You do look young,
although
man. You look
more
great.
Accomplished than I am.
Shut your butt.
Okay.
But it was.
You were saying in those days.
Yes. If you didn't have the natural ability to do the martial arts, like my dad was pretty hardcore.
Okay.
He didn't want you. He probably had 30 students. Maybe half of them weren't paying at the time, and you know, he had to pay rent, so he fought to pay rent, earn the money to. You know, pay rent for the school and the facility. And when he met my mom, that's when things started to change.
Right.
She came in with the business mind and turned it into what it is today.
How many schools do you guys have?
We just have one.
Just the one. Okay.
I mean, we wanted to kind of branch out, but it's difficult to, it takes years to train somebody. We don't want to put somebody in a school that I've only been training for a year or 2 years. You know, you have to be, my dad wants guys who've been, you know, second degree black belt or higher to own a school. So it takes years to bring somebody up to be able to do that. So it's been very difficult.
Is it true that he took you to, I think, like UFC 2 or 3?
He did.
Which one? Do you remember?
It was UFC 3. It was where Chemo fought, Hoist Gracie and pulled like,
oh yeah.
His ponytail or something out.
So
right?
How old were you? So you were like,
I was
11 or something?
Yeah, 11, 12.
He takes
it
you
to
this?
It was in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Okay.
See, that's, as a fighter family, we had no say-so growing up.
Right.
We had to train martial arts, right? So we weren't the kind of family that sat around the house watching like family shows or playing games. We watched fights. That's what we did as a family. Either we were fighting for my dad's entertainment.
Yeah.
Or we were watching fights. So when the UFC came out, it was such an unknown thing, such an exciting thing. Like, you know, nobody's ever seen anything like this before. So I wanted to go. There was one in a fight in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Uh-huh.
UFC 3, I think it was. So my dad's like, we're going. I told my dad then I was going to do this one day.
Really?
Oh yeah.
So it was your idea?
It was my idea.
You're a little kid. There probably weren't a lot of little kids at these events back then.
No, not at all. There were zero kids. And I remember my dad taking me in and people were like, you're taking this kid to watch these fights, you know? So yeah, I told my dad then, which is why, you know, when I first got the call to fight for the UFC, I was going to turn it down.
Why?
I felt like I wasn't ready. You know, a lot of these guys, even more now, had such collegiate, you know, wrestling backgrounds, jiu-jitsu backgrounds, and I was just, you know, putting that back into my training regimen. I put that on the back burner. I was focused on kickboxing. So I found myself doing more jiu-jitsu and wrestling to be a better sparring partner for GSP. He brought me in to help with his training camps. So I just felt like I wasn't ready for these guys. And my dad was like, listen, man, remember, you know, it took you to Charlotte, North Carolina. You told me then you're going to do this one day.
Wow.
So, you know, what's the worst thing that happened? You lose. So what? You know, go out there and, you know, this could probably be, you know, they may never ask you to come back on, you know, fight for them again. So go out there and have some fun. And it was cool because GSP walked me. He was in my corner for my first fight. And ended up knocking a guy out and been along for the ride ever since.
So if your dad, and that was the Dan Sijin fight, right?
Yep, Dan Sijin.
UFC
143. 143. Yeah. You are good.
Yeah, man.
You are good. I wish I had that UFC knowledge.
I'm stupid about everything, but
I was embarrassed, you know, when I was on your show. Remember the one we had the MMA trivia, and I completely,
yeah, I know.
I felt like I had to do some studying after that. So thank you.
We actually just had our second one this past Friday.
I heard.
Yeah, and there was a person who everyone said was going to be the Wonder Boy. I'm not going to spoil it, but they said that he or she was going to be the Wonder Boy of the second event, and that person ended up winning.
What?
Yeah.
Was it Stipe won ours,
yes,
right?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
And, well, I remember doing it and then looking out in the crowd trying to, you had fans trying to tell me the answer, mouthing it off. I still can, I'm a bad lip reader.
But I heard if we did like anime or something like that, you would.
Anime or Harry Potter.
Harry Potter. Okay. Well, I'll work on that.
Next time.
Okay.
Next time. I will win.
But if you would have not listened to your dad, or if your dad didn't convince you, you would have actually said no to that opportunity?
I would have said no. I just felt like I wasn't ready. You know, I mean, I'm going up there to TriStar and just getting smoked by these amateur wrestlers, you know, and I was a blue belt at the time in jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you're getting, and it, to be honest with you, I was in that situation before my very first fight in kickboxing. I'm sitting here getting beat up by my sister every day, you know, so I'm thinking I'm horrible.
Right.
So my dad, my very first fight, I was 15, looked like I was 12. I was very young, and fought a guy who was 26 and 20-0. And it was kind of a way for my dad to show me that I was better than what I thought I was. I ended up beating the brakes off the guy, but that's how I got my nickname, the Wonder Boy.
Oh, really?
I fought that guy, and the commentator afterwards was talking to my opponent, and he was like, "Hey, what'd you think about this kid, Steven?" He was like, "Man, I wonder why I even stepped in the ring with this boy." And the announcer called me Wonder Boy, and it stuck with me ever since.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's amazing. And did you like the nickname initially?
I did. I thought it was pretty catchy, pretty cool. You know, you had the Golden Boy that I watched all the time, Oscar De La Hoya in boxing.
Yep.
So I was like, "Oh, that's pretty cool, man." So everybody's asking me when I'm changing it to Wonder Man.
No, don't do that.
Don't do it.
It's like Uriah Faber. Right? You're still a California kid.
Yeah, got to. As long as I'm walking out to Tenacious D, Wonder Boy,
you're right.
I'm going to be Wonder Boy.
One of the best walkouts in the history of the sport.
Ever. Yeah. Ever. It was funny because I was like on the top list of, I was on the top list greatest walkout song and worst walkout songs.
Really?
Yeah, I was on both.
Whoever did the worst one, they don't know what
they're talking about. Needs just to be slapped.
Have you met them, Tenacious D?
I haven't, man. I'm a huge fan of Tenacious D.
Do they even know that you use their
song? I don't even think so. I don't even know. It would be cool.
That's sad.
To walk out, maybe when I get that title shot again, to have Jack Black actually sing it live as I'm walking out.
Yes.
That would be cool. Not up there, it's not on the same level as Stylebender's walk out. His was legit because he
did
breakdancing, doing like all the cool stuff. I'm not that good. I mean,
I feel like you're a pretty good dancer with the way you move your legs.
I like to think so, but you know, I like to think I'm a good singer too. But that's only in my car and shower.
Okay,
you know,
I feel like you could do country. Are you a country singer?
I do like country. You know, I listen to everything. Dad listened to oldies. You know, of course, you got to keep up with what kids are listening to today.
Yeah,
you know, I teach all the kids, so yeah, I try and keep up.
Your last fight was at Madison Square Garden,
yes.
Vicente Luque.
Tough.
Come back after the couple losses. Tough guy.
Yeah.
But I thought we spoke afterwards. I thought one of your best performances. You still feel that way?
I definitely do. You know, coming, especially off those two losses, I felt like I had to prove to myself more than anybody that I'm still in this game. You know, there are people asking questions. Is he losing it? You know, is he getting too old? You know, does he still have the fire, that flame in him that he had before? Why isn't he not performing, you know, the way we've seen in the past?
You heard these things. You heard
just social
whispers.
Media whispers about it. And that it kind of upset me, you know, not what they were saying, but just in myself, like why am I not performing the best that I can? And I felt like I have been, you know, the only losses that I felt like I actually had was the Matt Brown and the Anthony Pettis, where it was clear he knocked me out.
Right.
And Matt Brown beat me in my second fight. I think he actually won it. But the other ones, I felt like I could have gone either way. I felt like I won those, you know, the two Tyron and even the Darren Till. But, so it just lit a fire in me to show everybody that, hey, Steve Wonderboy Thompson is still here. I mean, I've got years to come. I like to think that I'm a young 36-year-old. So, still got many years to come.
Reminds me of the great Roy Jones Jr. He once came out with a rap song called "Y'all Must Have Forgot." You were the "Y'all Must Have Forgot" moment of UFC 244. Everyone counting you out. Y'all Must Have Forgot. Wonder Boy's still here.
Exactly.
He's still,
let's go. You know, I mean, Vicente Luque was in a 6-fight winning streak. Tough guy for sure. Hard head, obviously. These are my trophies right here.
Yes.
So, you know, it was just good. It's fun to go out there for me, not just to fight, but just trying and that cerebral game, trying to figure your opponent out. What kind of changes did they make? You can watch footage on them all day and still, you know, you go out there and it's different. Like I was telling you, you know, it's different when you stand out in front of somebody. You may know that, oh, he was going to throw a right hand or a lead hand hook, but how he sets it up, when is he going to throw it? Those are all reads and things you got to figure out when you're out there. And that's what makes the game fun for me. It's not just a, you know, for a lot of these guys, they go out there and just throw. And if it lands, it lands, you know, they're just not, they're, you can tell there's not a whole lot of, figuring out going on. You know, they're just going out there just fighting. But it's the finesse game. It's the figuring out game, the cerebral game that I find very fun about the MMA game, you know?
As you know, the main event was Nate Diaz, yes. Jorge Masvidal. They fought for this BMF title. I have something very exciting for you here.
Uh-oh.
You know about this?
No, I do not.
You have no idea?
I don't think so.
You don't just come to Bristol all the way from South Carolina and we don't leave you with any kind of parting gift, but I can't take any credit for this.
Okay.
Here we go. Let me do this. We have any Uh-oh. Dramatic music? Oh, we got, you can't hear the music, right?
I can't, but it's no. Okay. I'll think
just
of something.
Trust me. It's very dramatic. We even changed the lighting for you. So, on behalf of your management team, Paradigm Sports Management, I would like to present to you the nicest mofo
what?
Belt.
This are you kidding me right now?
Is a very apropos belt. This was made custom for you, the wow. NMF title.
You know what?
Awarded to the great Stephen Wonderboy Thompson.
I'm
honored to be holding this belt. This is the real deal right here.
Guys, check.
Go back to the microphone so everyone can listen to you. And tell us all, there's a lot of fine details on this thing. Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, what? The inaugural nicest mofo champion. Look at that.
This. Are you kidding me? Nicest NMF belt. Mofo, MSG, New York City, God bless, please and thank you.
I love that part. I love the please and thank you. Show it to the camera right over there. There it is.
This
Stephen Wonderboy Thompson.
There we go.
What do you think?
This is it. This is...
Did you have any idea this was coming?
No idea.
That it was in production? This is all them.
I had no idea.
Audie, Tim, JC, they all did it for you at Paradigm.
I got to give them a hug and a kiss for this.
Yes.
Are you kidding me? Wow. Guys, I'm honored. Thank you very much. Ari Helwani.
Yeah. Isn't
that
cool?
How did you keep this in? How did you not tell me?
Listen, I was told to keep my mouth shut. Sometimes I could keep a secret.
What?
Isn't that nice?
That is amazing.
But you know, we joke about it. It is apropos. I know you and Max Holloway were joking about this sort of thing. You are literally the nicest person in the world. You deserve it.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I really do appreciate it. Everybody out there, all my fans, I love y'all. I love you.
This is maybe a sign of things to come. First the NMF. Then the actual welterweight title.
Yeah, I think so. You know, and I'm not giving up on that title, y'all. And whoever's got it, I'm coming for it. I don't even know what I'm ranked right now, but
who cares?
Yeah, who cares, right?
Yeah.
Who cares? I mean,
the rankings don't mean anything.
Nope. I'm coming back. I'm coming back strong, y'all. Like you saw my last fight.
Yeah.
100%.
So let me ask you, like just talking about the nicest part of this.
Yes. Cause
I mean, this is a cool thing. It's a nice honor because it's legit. It's not just a joke. You spend so much time with kids. You're a role model. I've always said, like, if I want my kids to have a poster of a fighter, you're the guy, right? You're like a real life superhero.
You just made my day, Ariel.
Oh, no, it's true though. It really is true. I have three children. I mean, you're such a great, but does anything ever bother you? Do you ever get upset about anything?
You know what? That's funny you say that because it upsets like my family, my dad, that nothing upsets me.
Nothing?
Nothing. Okay. I take that back. I usually don't promote this.
Okay.
But I game.
Yeah.
Play video games.
Yeah.
I play on Twitch.
Yep.
Kids don't watch it.
Yep.
I rage.
Okay.
Rage. It's like they're the only thing that gets to me.
The video games.
The video games.
You rage.
So I rage like no other, for sure. So I play Modern Warfare, you know, Blackout. I play Apex. And when I die, I rage.
Like, what does rage mean for you? Because, like, I know what it means for me.
All right. I don't, like, throw controllers.
Okay.
But... And very few people have actually heard me do this, but okay. I cuss.
No.
I know it's not crazy. Like my brother, he's been through like 5 or 6 controllers. We game together. You know,
okay,
I got a crew that we game with. He's been through like 5 or 6 controllers. You know, he's made it on like a rage compilation on YouTube. It's funny, but,
I can't imagine you cussing. Do you have a go-to cuss word? You don't have to say it.
I don't have a go-to,
S word, F word.
Probably the F word.
Really?
Yeah.
I cannot picture you saying that word. I honestly cannot. That is amazing.
I'm not saying it on the show, though.
No, I
can't
I don't
say
want
it on the show.
No, you
okay.
can't. You're a role model.
Can't do it.
You're a gentleman. But so you get that mad. That's the one thing that makes you mad.
That's the only thing.
Video games.
Yes. And I think it upsets my family because I guess they feel like, you know, I don't know, maybe easy to take advantage of because I just don't, nothing really bothers me. Really? I shake it off. Like I get comments that, you know, that's such a cool thing that you got that nothing bothers you.
Yeah.
But then I also get, man, nothing really bothers you. Like, you know, even when people take advantage of you or try to, you don't get upset. I just think that it's, I don't know, man. It's, there's life short, man. And there's, you know, to hold grudges and things like that. Right. It's not worth it.
You don't get moody. You don't get down.
No, I don't, man.
Really?
I really don't.
You wake up, pep in your step.
And I think a lot has to do with the martial arts. Just, you know, I get all my frustrations out on a bag or a sparring partner. You know, just take all your frustrations out on them and afterwards you're good.
There's got to be times where the kids are annoying you at the school. They're getting unruly. Just want to smack them upside the head.
No. I love it. I take that back. If they do, instead of slapping them, I just smoke them in the head with a dodgeball. When we have dodgeball tournaments, it's on.
Really?
But these kids, they've been playing since they were three. Right. So they got cannons. You know, I got to treat them as dang adults. You know, they're aggressive, man.
Well, how old are the youngest kids at the school?
3 years old.
3 years old?
We take them as young as three. Holy. Three and four is our little dragon's class. It's the cutest thing you've ever seen.
Wow.
So in that, we work on balance. Tumble rolls, lining up skills, concentration skills, you know. A lot of these kids nowadays, and it's funny, when I was in school, when I was in the martial arts in class, I would say 95% of the kids were athletes.
Okay.
Now it's getting to the point where it's the opposite, you know.
What do you mean?
I don't know if it has to do with the times have changed. In the 80s, early 90s, kids played outside.
Yeah.
Kids developed their athleticism by doing that.
Right.
You know, nowadays, a lot of these kids are sitting behind an iPad or a video game and, you know, they're not developing those skills, you know. I was listening to Tim Kennedy not too long ago talking about how they were having a hard time getting people into the special forces. Just, you know, they only bring in 100 people they allow, but they have to have certain requirements.
Okay.
And people can't pass those requirements anymore.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because of,
and you're noticing this when you see the kids.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, you got kids that come in, you know, bloodshot eyes. I mean, been playing video, been on the iPad for 3, 4, 5, 6 hours, you know?
Yeah.
But on the other hand, that's another reason why I love what I do. You know, they can come off that and they'll have that karate class. At least they're doing something, you know? Right. They're developing something, they're becoming martial arts. And people come in for different reasons, you know, self-confidence. Maybe they want to lose a couple pounds or maybe they're being picked on in school. But to see that kid come in, no matter what, if they're an athlete or not, leave that class with a smile on their face, knowing that I learned something. We got kids that have been taken since they were 3 years old. They're in their 20s now. But knowing that I had something to do with being a part of his life, being a positive influence in their life, makes everything worth it.
And you're there all the time?
I live there.
Every day?
Every day.
Like the Luque fight. When are you back?
I was back in the next day.
Monday?
Broken hands and all.
Teaching
class. Well, I wasn't teaching. I was there kind of helping out. I was pretty much bandaged up. Couldn't do a whole lot with my hands, but I was there at the school for sure.
The young kids, do they know what you do for a living?
They do. They
so
watch.
They watch
it.
Really?
They watch. Well, sometimes the parents will watch it and then
tell them.
Show them afterwards.
Right.
But it's funny because after a win or lose, they're the first ones to tell you, you know, there's no filter when it comes to kids, which is why I love it.
Yeah.
You win. Awesome. They're there hugging you. You lose. They'll let you know. You know, the Pettis fight, when I got knocked out, like the next day, Monday, they're like, Mr. Steven, I saw you get knocked out Saturday.
Oh, no.
You keep your hands up, you know. I'm like, shut up, kid.
Yeah.
Nah, but it's awesome, man. You know,
even that one didn't mess you up?
It didn't. Well, I take that back. It didn't upset me. It just got me thinking, like, why did I not see that punch coming?
Huh.
I normally see it coming. Normally see everything coming. But why did I not see that one? You know, all in the back of the head, always in the back of your head, even, you know, from day one in the fight game, you're wondering what it feels like to get knocked out or if this is the time it's going to happen. And for 20 something years, I've been asking myself, is this the time? Is this it? You know, you try and push that stuff out of your head.
Yeah.
You know, but it just pops in there.
Cause you've never been knocked out.
Never been knocked
out. In anything.
Out. Nothing.
Wow.
I've seen stars for sure. When Tyron hit me the first fight, I saw stars, but I wasn't out. And it's funny because Tyron hit me harder.
Mm.
His was just right on the money.
Wow.
It was on the money. And that kind of got me thinking for a while, for a few days. Like, why did I not see that coming? And I went back and I watched it over and over and over again on my own time. I like to watch the fights on my, by myself, not with anybody in the room.
Okay.
I like to study my fights by myself. I don't like to have, you know, the whole team there. Yeah. I like to do it on my own. And I went back and watched it. I was like, man, why did this happen? So never been knocked out. And I think that was another reason why it just kind of lit a fire in me. Because, you know, I normally see this stuff. I normally see me coming, but you can't stop everything. It's bound to happen. So I push it. If you sit there and dwell on it, I think it can affect you negatively, in a negative way. So I just push it back in my mind and, you know, promise myself to train harder, better, stronger, to not let it happen again.
How much does it gnaw at you that you didn't get those, you know, the belt in those title fights? Both of them were so close.
It was,
right?
It was very close. And what bothered me the most, especially that second fight, was not the fact that I didn't get it, even though it was close. It was, I know I could have done better. I know I was expecting something from Tyron that didn't show up that day. I expected a more aggressive fighter. I figured since he saw me in that first round, took me down the first round, he was going to be more of an aggressive, maybe, you know, wrestler that fight. So that's what I expected. But he expected me to be a little more aggressive. So now we're sitting here playing this waiting game the whole time. And that's what people see. People remember that last fight. They don't remember the first one. The awesome duke it out, bang it out, you know, almost knocked out Stephen Thompson fight of the night. They don't remember that one. They remember the boring second Tyron fight. That's what people remember. So I just know I could have done a whole lot better in that fight than what I showed.
Will it bother you if you never get the belt? Like, do you feel like that's something that in, you know, 30, 40 years will eat at you? Like your brother-in-law?
What would bother me the most was the fact that I just gave up on it.
Ah, interesting.
You know?
Yeah.
If I go up there and I give it all I've got and I make it up to that title shot again and I give it all I've got in that fight and don't get it, it wouldn't bother me.
Okay.
Just the fact that I know that I gave it my all, I think going up there and not making or making excuses of why I couldn't make it to this training session, or I'm feeling a little tired, I didn't go to that training session, or I'm a little injured, so I'm not going to train today. I see fighters, even at the top of the game, have that mindset. I've trained with GSP, I've trained with Anderson Silva, Lyoto Machida, Chris Weidman. I've trained with a lot of champions, and that's what these guys have over everybody else, is that dedication, that indomitable spirit, that perseverance that nobody else has. Even though they're injured or maybe feeling a little down, they still find a way to make it to the gym and work out and train. And that's what gives me confidence stepping out there, is knowing that I've done everything I could to prepare for the fight. More than anything, that's what gives me the confidence. So I know that, you know, putting it in my all, and even if I don't make it, I'd still be happy knowing that I gave it my all. And just still, I mean, fighting the best fighters in the world, who can say they've done that?
Right.
You know, fighting the best guys in the entire world. That's crazy. You know, it's like an anime or something you see. So, but I'm not giving up on it for sure.
Your division was in focus this past weekend. Did you watch the Usman-Covington fight? What do you think of it?
I thought it was a great fight. Kamaru Usman, I think, is a great champion. I was surprised that the judges had as close as it was. From what I saw, the last round was the deciding factor of who was going to win that fight. They had Colby winning. One judge had him winning three rounds. I didn't see that at all.
I had a 2-2 going to the fifth.
I had him winning the first round.
Yeah.
And then Kamaru Usman the rest.
Interesting. Okay.
I thought he landed the more, powerful shots. I think he landed more. Colby was throwing a lot, but a lot of those were missing or glancing. They weren't clean shots. Kamaru Usman definitely kept his calm. Everybody thought he was going to go out there and be, you know, emotional.
Yeah, emotional, yeah.
I was that's how a champion should fight, I think, right there. How he performed Saturday was just epic, was amazing. He kept his cool, stayed focused, kept to his game plan, threw a lot of body shots, which slowed him down, which I didn't even think about. Because he's so shredded, you wouldn't think that his body would be a weak point for Colby. And him being a wrestler, using his core a lot wrestling, you think it would be strong, you know, more conditioned as it was. But those body shots were definitely playing, you know, taking its toll on Covington for sure.
What about fighting with a broken jaw for 2.5 rounds?
Talk about somebody tough. I mean,
has that ever happened to you?
I've never broken my jaw.
Yeah. Thank you.
I've broken both my thumbs in the Masvidal fight, second round. I broke both my hands in the second round, the last fight. But couldn't imagine having a broken jaw. I don't know what that feels like.
Yeah.
I've been hitting the jaw and my jaw be sore for a few days and having to bite down on my mouthpiece to kind of straighten everything out. That's painful.
Yeah.
But having a broken jaw, I would have no idea what that would
feel like. That's my point.
Tough.
Like, he's a very, you know, polarizing figure, and I know, yeah. You know, people don't like it, but like, you gotta give the guy credit, right?
100%. I mean, he came to fight. And that's what he does. And you gotta give props to a guy like that. Yeah, he talks. He's putting on a show. I don't think he's good at it, but he's putting on a show.
not your cup of tea?
Not my cup of tea.
Okay.
You know, when you're talking about personal things, you know, I think you gotta kind of gone too far, but he's an athlete, man, and he's got the fighting spirit for sure. Like every time you see Colby Covington, he comes to fight. Doesn't hold back. Hmm. And you got to give the guy props, man. He's definitely an amazing fighter to make it where he is today, to go out there and fight, you know, most of the fight with a broken jaw. I mean, you could tell something was wrong because his mouth was open the whole time.
Yeah. Crazy. Now, for you, obviously title shot won't be next, right? We still have to work our way back up. But how many, in your mind, how many more before you're back into that situation?
You know, people ask me that, and I always look at Masvidal.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
I was his last fight.
Yeah.
Or last loss, excuse me.
Yep.
And two fights in, you know, he's one of the most popular guys in the UFC.
Yep.
And now they're talking about title shot after he beat Nate Diaz. So I could be right there again. Two, three fights. But not just that, but putting on a good performance.
Yeah.
Will make all the difference whether or not I, you know, how fast I get up to that title shot or not.
So, you have the next one yet?
Not yet. I mean, there's a lot of guys right now in that top five. I would love to fight somebody in the top five. I think I'm eight, maybe.
Who comes to mind?
Oh, man. Leon Edwards. RDA. I know he's fighting Michael Chiesa coming up, which is a good fight for him. Michael Chiesa. He's a monster. But right, you know, RDA, Leon Edwards, Colby Covington. I mean, just anybody and everybody, to be honest with you. Anybody in that top five, I would love to face.
Okay.
So
there's a couple of names. I don't know if they're in the top five that came to mind. You don't have to agree with me. Damien Maia, I think interesting style-wise. Yeah. And Santiago Ponzinibbio, who's on
Ponzinibbio.
A big winning streak.
I tried to get a fight with him before the Pettis fight. I think that's why we ended up getting the Pettis fight. Maybe got injured or something. Ponzinibbio's tough.
Yeah.
I think he would be a good one for sure. I think is he fighting somebody coming up?
He doesn't have anyone.
He doesn't have anybody.
Yeah, he's had some health issues. He
okay.
Had,
staff well, I hope
infection.
He heals up, man.
Yeah.
But that would be another good one for sure. It reminds me. I mean, I remember when I think of him, that Mike Perry fight that he had was just a brawler.
Yep.
Brawler fight. So.
And this guy, Jeff Neal, coming up. He's not top five yet, but I think he could be a force in the next year or so.
Just knocked out
Mike Perry.
Mike
on
Perry,
Saturday.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, 100%.
In 90 seconds.
90 seconds. Yeah, that was first round?
Mike Perry never been stopped before via strikes. He's a tough guy.
Yeah, and obviously a good striker. I mean, I saw the kick to the head that staggered him.
Yep.
Came out of nowhere. Man, these guys in the MMA now, they're just on another level. It's crazy from when I started till now how much the game has evolved.
By the way, I wanted to ask you about this. I was talking to a boxing writer about this, Mark Kriegel, about how in boxing, we were talking about this guy named Teofimo Lopez, whose dad corners him, and he was having some drama with that. And I feel like in boxing, the father-son coach-fighter dynamic is a lot more prevalent than in MMA. You see a lot more dads in their dads in their son's corner in boxing than in MMA. Your dad is in your corner.
Yes.
He's your head coach. Why do you think that is? Why do you not see as many fathers in the corner of their sons as opposed to in boxing? I feel like you see that a lot more in boxing.
I think you do because, you know, MMA still, I mean, compared to boxing, still a very new sport.
Uh-huh.
And in boxing, a lot of these guys start when they're 3 or 4 years old. You don't get that a whole lot in MMA. You don't see a whole lot of people. You get specialists that start at a very young age. Karate guys, maybe kickboxing guys, jujitsu, you know, guys who start at a very young age, but not MMA. Mm. So in boxing, you got these kids who are starting when they're 3 or 4 years old, and you know, dad has always been there coaching them. And so you see that more in boxing because they start at a younger age. The dad's always there. Maybe they're the ones coaching them at first. Or maybe you got a dad who was an old school boxer and you got the kid, you know, he's bringing them up to be,
right,
you know, the next thing. But in MMA, I don't think it's been around long enough to see that happening yet.
Have you ever thought about not being with your dad? Like, has it created problems for you guys? Or
no, not at all. I mean, in the gym, he's my coach.
Okay.
Outside of that, he's pops. He's my dad. You know, he's the guy I hang out with. But in the gym, he's trained a lot of fighters, kickboxers, pro fighters. He's been around. He's been in the game for a very long time, so I know he knows what he's doing, and I don't question that. And I think you see a lot of these father-son duos kind of break apart because I feel that once the son starts getting successful, start winning fights and, you know, winning championships, I guess they feel maybe the dad doesn't have anything to offer anymore.
Mm.
You know, you saw, you know, Roy Jones Jr. and his dad. You see,
Floyd and his dad.
Floyd and his dad, you know, and he had some problems. So I think there's a lot of ego going on and then it causes problems. But, you know, I can't imagine not being, you know, being out there without my pops.
Well, you take UFC 3 together, you might as well
finish it out
together, right?
Exactly.
I mean, it's only fitting.
Exactly.
It's an amazing relationship that you have with your dad. You know, to go through these intense moments, you know, weight cutting and the big fights and the spotlight, and he's always there by your side. I admire
always.
It. It's a beautiful thing. As a father, I love to see that. You know, I don't know if I would ever want my kids to fight. I don't know how you guys do it. That's why I have so much respect for you guys. But it's always cool to see your dad by your side each and every time, through the good and the bad.
Well, I wouldn't be where I am if it wasn't for him, for sure. The good and the bad. I mean, he's a tough cat for sure, even on the losses or when you make a mistake, he gets on your butt for it. But I thank him for it every day, for sure. And even if they don't compete, get him in some martial arts if you can.
Yes.
There's no better, especially for a parent, knowing that your youngin' can defend themselves if need be.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's a big confidence booster knowing that when you step in a room, you can take everybody out in that room if you needed to.
Yes, absolutely. Even if you don't look like
exactly.
a traditional fighter.
Those are the people you gotta watch out for, the ones that don't look like fighters.
The NMFs.
Yes, the NMFs.
If you will.
The NMFs is the ones you gotta watch out for.
I was there at UFC 205 and at 209. Unfortunately, didn't go your way, but I'm honored to be here as you get this title.
Honor that I get it from you, and thank you, Audie. Team, my whole team at Paradigm Management, you guys are awesome. I love you. And I appreciate this, man.
Thank you for coming. I really
Anytime.
Appreciate it, Stephen. Safe travels back home. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
To you and your family. And it's always great to see you. And I hope the hands heal up. No more shaking hands. I'll maybe just give you like
bump.
A,
give me a bump.
A little air bump. There you go.
I love it.
I don't want to hurt you. Enjoy the belt. And we're going to do a swap here.
Yeah.
You and Megan Anderson, two Paradigm clients. Out with Stephen, in with Megan.
Let's do it, brother.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. There he is, the great Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. Still one of the best. Y'all must have forgot. Still the man at 170 pounds. So we say goodbye to him, but now we say hello to the great Megan Anderson.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm a little overdressed.
No, that's okay. Did you come this dress for us?
No.
Okay. All right. I was going to take the compliment.
Okay. Yes.
Why?
I did.
What are you doing here?
I
put the mic down. I want to see. I don't want it to cover your face. There
I
we go.
I was doing some stuff for SportsCenter Australia. We're doing like a year in review type show. So
oh,
that's
nice.
What I'm here for.
Okay. Well, welcome. Yeah. You of course didn't come from Australia. You came from
Kansas City,
but it was a huge weekend for your country.
Yeah.
Mates, right? Alexander Volkanovski. Do you know Alex?
Yeah, I fought on some cards. Back on the local scene with Alex.
Wow.
So it's been amazing to see from like then to now how everything has progressed with him. I cried.
Really?
It's when you kind of look at the numbers, there's only really like 9 or 10 like true just Australians in the UFC. So it was kind of a big deal for us. So, I know Rob was the first one.
But he was an Australian born.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So Rob, even though he does claim Australia, he wasn't the first Australian born. Alex is the first one. So this is a huge deal. Like I'm so happy for him. I'm so proud to represent Australia alongside arguably one of the nicest guys along with Stephen. Like
I know. Right.
Alex
no, like
so
I was just
nice.
Going to say he could be a challenger for that belt as well. He's just the nicest guy.
He really is.
It's amazing. And I'm wondering like, so you said you knew him like pre-UFC local scene, right?
Yeah. So,
did you see this in him? Like, did you think he would turn into this good of a fighter?
Oh, he was a savage back then. Like, he was mauling people like way back then. This was back in like 2013. I remember there was a show called Rochambeau MMA.
Okay.
And he fought on their very first show, and like I remember watching him then. Like this was back in 2013, and then a couple of years later, we fought on the same show together. So, and I know I fought on 232 with him back December last year. But
right.
It's been amazing to like it could not happen to anyone like nicer or more worthy.
Right. And what a performance. I had some of the stats right over here. I want to get it right.
The fact that he out-volumed Max, which is like, that's how Max beats people. He out-volumes them. The fact that he out-volumed
75 Max. Leg strikes. Just the type of second most in UFC history.
Yeah. I feel like Max is going to be in a wheelchair for a little bit. That looked painful.
Did you expect that it would be that one-sided? I mean, you can make a case that he won, what, 4 of the 5 rounds, maybe all 5?
I had it 4-0 going into the 5th.
Okay.
For Alex. Max definitely did kind of pull back a little bit in the 5th round and started laying on the pressure a little bit more. But I thought it was going to be close, and it was a tough order. Max has been, he was on a 15-fight win streak in that division, so it's kind of like he has run through everyone pretty much in the division. So I definitely knew it was going to be close, but I didn't see it being so one-sided as it was. I think City Kickboxing, I remember seeing a tweet from the night, like from the start of 2018 to now, look at what they've done. Like, I feel like for sure case for gym
of the year. Yeah. You know, I feel bad about one thing. His main gym is actually not City Kickboxing. Yeah. It's Freestyle Fight Gym,
in
I believe.
Illawarra.
Right? Joe Lopez is his head coach. I feel like they don't get enough of the credit here, right?
Yeah. And the thing is that too, like a lot of those guys went and, like the kind of like the cool thing to do a couple of years ago was like go and, fight at, they would train out of Tiger. Muay Thai in Phuket. So I know a lot of them were training out of there. I know a lot of the local guys from Australia would go and they would all train at Tiger together. And it was weird because they all kind of switched to City Kickboxing all of a sudden. So it's kind of cool to see how everyone kind of transitions.
Yeah. They're on fire.
Yeah.
I mean, Kaikar France lost. Had he won, they would have been.
He still looked really good. Yeah. Like Marino is a savage.
Right.
Like he is.
They would have been undefeated this year. I think like 12-0. End up 11-1, which is phenomenal. Like tremendous. Good for them. And then two champions coming out of the gym as well is amazing. When you watch that as a fellow Australian, what does it do for you? Like as far as, I know you said you were emotional, but like does it inspire you? Like I want to be the next one.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. We are such a small country in terms of MMA. We're still like a couple of years behind and we're still progressing and it's still growing there. So it is a big deal for us. And, I get upset when like the media in Australia don't pick up on that type of success, more so. Mm. MMA is kind of like the sport that nobody really talks about in Australia. So, I wish that the media would pick up on that more because, you know, we have some phenomenal athletes doing some amazing things and, you know, it would be cool to have more of like the mainstream Australian, you know, media kind of support that as well.
Have you checked on how they've covered this? Is this a big deal yet?
Haven't. No.
No.
I
wonder, like, could he sell like 50,000 like the Whitaker Izzy fight or he's not quite there yet?
It's kind of hard because like Alex is one of those guys who's just so nice.
He's almost too nice, right?
And Izzy is such a personality. He, like, arguably one of the best personalities in the company right now. And he speaks so well and he is so engaging. And Alex isn't really at that level yet. But I would like to see both of them fight.
Yes.
On the same card, like defend at the same time.
I know they're going back next year, so that would make a lot of sense.
Well, and the Australian cards always sell out. They only go back home like twice a year. So it's kind of it always sells out. It's always a big deal. So
now you have been teasing that you have some information to share.
Yeah.
What is that information?
I get to finally announce my own fight.
Okay.
For once. February 29th, I'm going to be fighting against Norma Dumont, who they signed back in March.
Okay.
Of this year, so she will be making her debut, and it's going to be in Norfolk, Virginia.
Yes. Yep. So that is at 145?
145, yes.
Looking to, you know, build on what happened in October, yeah. Go for two in a row now?
Of course, yeah.
So this is signed, you're good to go.
Yes.
Yeah, I think Felicia Spencer is also fighting on that card as well. So
I didn't know that.
A couple of women's featherweights.
That'd be awesome.
On the same card. Okay, so congratulations, you're
Thank
back.
You.
I thought you were going to say on the Auckland card. But
yeah.
But you're going to Virginia. That's fine. Now, you watched Amanda fight, yep. Obviously, on Saturday. That was at 135 as opposed to 145. But yep. When you watch her fight, how far away? I know people want to like almost push you into that because you're the, you know, now that Cyborg is gone, you're the most recognizable and famous 145er on the roster, right? There's not a lot to choose from, but you are that person. When you watch her fight, in your mind, how far away are you from Amanda?
I personally love that fight, and I think after Amanda's last couple of fights, just kind of destroying everyone, like even though she did dominate Jermaine on the ground a lot, I feel like she looked human. She didn't have that, you know, after she beat Chris and knocked out Holly, like she kind of had this invincibility about her, like, but I think Jermaine really showed that, you know, she can hurt, you can hurt Amanda, like with striking, and, you know, I think she came in with an amazing game plan, though. I think
Amanda
did. Like she always comes in very smart, and I like how she's progressed over the years. She was very like aggressive with her fighting style early on, but like if you've seen like her last couple of fights, she's being more patient and more calculated. And she's picking her shots, and she's still aggressive, but in like a smarter way. So it has been cool to see, like, even from like a fan's perspective, how she's grown over the years. But I think for me, another win or two, and I feel like I deserve a title shot. And I know a lot of people are just like, oh, there's no one in the division. I'm like, well, like I
You're
get
there.
Another win and two. Like I'm here. I'm fighting because this will be my fifth fight in 20 months.
Wow.
So just under 2 years, and that's five fights. Like I feel like that's pretty consistent considering there's not supposed to be a division. But
yeah, and she has said she really wants to defend the title. She doesn't want it to just go away.
Yeah, and like I hope that she still campaigns for that. And it's kind of like in this women's featherweight is in this really weird kind of spot. Like, I learned a long time ago not to kind of get too, like, upset about what they're doing because there's not really been a lot of, you know, communication on what they're doing with it. So, you know, there's only so much I can do. So I'm just going to worry about what I control is, like, me fighting, and I'm fighting consistently, and I'm going to try and put on amazing performances, and that's all I can do. And if they want to keep booking me, like, I'm going to keep turning up and I'm going to keep fighting.
Have you ever fought below 145?
I did once, and it was like my second fight ever. So this was back when like I was walking under 150 pounds.
Okay. How much did you weigh in for the fight?
I think it was like 142.
Okay.
Something like that. And like this was back in 2014.
Okay.
So it's a little, I'm walking 10 to 15 pounds lighter than I normally do now, which is making my cuts easier and easier just because, like, my body is changing as I get older and, like, I'm adding muscle or this or that just because of the way my training is. Like, I've changed that up a bit. But I definitely, like, if I am over the next year consistently walking lighter, that might be a discussion. But it is hard for me to make 145. It's not easy, and I have to be so strict on everything I eat, on my training, on like the week of fight week, my diet, like everything has to be on point for me to like hit that number.
Okay, so the idea of 135 is just completely absurd.
Pretty much.
Okay.
Which is hard because like I know that's like everyone's like, oh, all the 45ers are just 135ers who don't want to make weight. I'm like, well, hello.
Yeah.
Like I can't really make 135.
Were you upset when Cyborg left?
like I was, but I wasn't. I feel like Chris deserves like the recognition and like to be paid what she deserves, like right. what she has worked for. She has been a pioneer for women's MMA and particularly the featherweights for a ridiculous amount of time. And to see her leave the UFC was sad because like that's a competitor in our division. And you know, obviously like I would like to fight her and all this kind of stuff, but, I also understand it. Like she's got to do what's best for her and, you know, Bellator, like they're going to take care of her and she's getting paid what she deserves. So like you can't not be happy for somebody when like they're going to a place where they're going to treat her
right
how she wants.
You know, It was a very emotional scene watching you win in Australia, mm-hmm. you know, because of the story of you coming yeah. back home and everything that you've been through. And I wanted to ask you, it's been a while since we talked. I wanted to ask you about the fight in Ottawa against Felicia Spencer. No, Rochester, excuse me. I was thinking Canadian. from what I understand, were you actually close to not doing that fight, like the day of or maybe the day before? Were you that anxious before the fight? That's the story that I heard. Is that accurate?
Yeah. And I don't like to say or like talk about it much because I don't want to take anything away from Felicia.
Sure.
I think she's an amazing person and she's an amazing athlete and she deserves all the success and she got her, like she was the better woman of the night. But yeah, like I had a lot of like internal stuff that I was dealing with and, I remember like 8 weeks before I was so burnt out and I had so many issues of my own that I hadn't dealt with from like my childhood and growing up and all that kind of stuff that like it kind of, I used to use that as fuel for my fighting and I kind of got to a point where I was becoming okay with it. So like I didn't really know what I was fighting for anymore. And I was in like a position where like I just let everything get to me and, 10 a.m. on the Saturday of the fight, we were supposed to shake out, with my coach, James, and he was in my hotel room like, hey, like, we need to make a decision. Like, do you want to do this or not?
It came to that.
Yeah.
And were you thinking not initially? Like, did he have to convince you?
He didn't really have to convince me, but he knows, like, the type of person I am. Like, I would never have been able to live with myself if I did, just because of like the type of person I am, like that's, I signed on the dotted line. Like no matter what is going on inside, like I have a job to do and my job is to go and to fight no matter what, like I put that shit aside and I'll deal with that afterwards. And we did that.
So were you having like a panic attack?
Yeah. Kind of like I deal with like a lot of like anxiety and stress and like depression. So it's kind of funny because like a lot of people are like, oh, well, like training and doing exercise helps like happy endorphins, all that kind of stuff. And yes, to a certain extent, but when like training twice a day, like hard every single day is your job. Like you're trying to improve, you're trying to be competitive, you're trying to have like good rounds in the gym, you're trying to go out and fight. Like those happy endorphins aren't really there because like it's a job. Mm. And I think like I started seeing a therapist and helping me with that. And because they weren't going to let me fight again after the Rochester fight until I figured everything else out.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Had you ever experienced that before, that close to a fight?
No.
Never. Why do you think it happened then? Like, why do you think it all came to a head?
I am so hard on myself. And I felt because of where the division was that I had to win and I had to put on good performances and to keep the division alive. But really at the end of the day, like if they didn't want to have the division, like they wouldn't keep booking me fights. Like I can't, one person winning or losing isn't control of an entire division. Like that's not my call to make. And I think once I realized that and I stopped putting so much pressure on myself, I think everything changed.
Okay. And you'd mentioned, and if you don't want to talk about this, I understand, but you mentioned like stuff in your childhood that you were dealing with. What are you referring to there?
Just a lot of stuff like in my home life. And, you know, it's kind of hard because like my dad was an alcoholic, growing up and like dealing with that. And it's kind of hard. I don't like to talk about it because like he is recovering and it's I think it's been like 6 years now since he had a drink and he made that decision, and he is a completely different person. So I don't feel like it's fair to bring that up a lot, because like I am so proud of him and how much he has changed. God damn it. And I think it's like he's an amazing person, and I take strength from him and being able to make that decision and change his life around as well. So like there is stuff that, you know, happened when I was younger that has affected me, but it's kind of in that position like that he's not that person anymore. So okay. Like I don't like to kind of bring it up too much, just because I don't know, it's in the past and like I've dealt with it.
Are you close?
Yeah.
And what about your mom?
My parents. Yeah, I'm close with my mom.
Are they together? Dad.
They are, yes.
That's great. Wow. And they support your MMA career?
They do, yeah. My mom was at first was like, oh, really? Like MMA?
Yeah.
Like, is this really where you want to go? But once she kind of like seen that I was passionate about it, and she seen like I was doing well and this could be like a successful career for me if I chose, like they're very supportive. And she can never watch my fights. Like she, even if she's there, she'll go outside and like she won't watch my fights until after it's over.
As long as she knows that you won, then she'll watch it.
Well, even if I lose, like the same thing.
Okay.
Like she can't, like she gets too like upset just because she doesn't want me to get hurt. Right. She knows how much it means. So it's like, she wants it to be over, and then she can like not stress about it anymore and just like watch it.
And so I don't know if a lot of people know this. I know maybe you've talked about it a couple times, but you are actually part of the Australian Army, right?
Yeah.
For 2 years and a half, right?
Yeah. So I went into the Australian Defence Force Academy, which is I was training to become an officer and doing what you guys call college at the same time.
So you're like in your early 20s?
So I went in straight after school. So I graduated. So our school year is from like January. It's like in 1 year. It's not switched over 2 years like it is
okay,
here.
Okay.
Because our summer is over Christmas.
Right. Okay, yep.
So I graduated in like November of 2007. And then, so I was 17 and I enlisted. I think my enlistment date was like January of 2008.
Okay.
So I was 17 and I turned 18 like a month into like my basic training. So.
And why did you decide to do that?
I did Army Cadets.
Okay.
Like when I going through school, and my dad was in the military as well. So it kind of was like a cool, like a natural progression. But then I realized like I'm extremely stubborn and hard headed and I have a problem with authority. And I would get in trouble a lot. So, decided it wasn't for me.
Okay. But it took you 2.5 years, right, to decide that?
Yeah. So I really talk about it a lot, but because of my own stubbornness, I would get into trouble a lot. And I got to a point where, like, I was so scared to get in trouble because, like, it was not good. Obviously, you don't want to get in trouble all the time, but I was getting like, I was kind of getting like not picked on, but like they were focusing me and targeting on me. And like, I was always made the example of, it kind of broke me to a point where I think it was like the start of 2010. I actually attempted suicide and ended up in the hospital just because like I was at a point where I was just so scared to do anything, and like I was just so mentally broken that I didn't know what else I could do. And you know, that was hard for my family, obviously. And you know, I think after that we made the decision like it wasn't for me, and kind of transitioned out and into more of like a civilian type job. And then a couple of years later I found MMA.
Did you try to leave the army and they just wouldn't let you, and that's why you?
It's like a process.
Okay.
Like if you want to leave, there's like certain things that you have to do to be able to, you know, leave. It's like you have to get permission and all this kind of stuff. So
it was drawn out.
Yeah. So that happened like early in 2010, and I didn't leave my like the date that I was able to leave was in July of that same year.
So I'm sorry to hear that you went through that.
Yeah. I want to say like it happens, but like it doesn't always happen, obviously, right. But like it's a part of my life that happened. And I'm no longer in that place. And that's why, with my fight, I'm actually bringing out like a shirt, and I'm donating proceeds of the shirt to Mental Health America. I feel like they do an amazing job promoting mental health and the mental health of America and the community, and helping people living with mental illnesses to, you know, help them with their needs and everyday life. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Good for you. So you're going to be wearing this shirt on fight week?
Probably, maybe during fight week, but like I obviously won't be able to walk sure. out in it because of like the uniform kit, but, you can, I have a new website, teammeganandersen.com, and you can go and pre-order your shirts and
nice.
A percentage of that is going to go towards Mental Health Australia, America, sorry.
How long, if you don't mind me asking, how long were you in the hospital for?
Probably about a week.
Okay. And how long did it take for you to feel like yourself again? Did you feel like, you know, like years later, did you
yeah.
feel? Oh, really? Okay.
It's kind of hard to explain. Like you kind of have to go through that to be able to understand it. I don't think it ever leaves you. And like dealing with like depression and stuff like mental illnesses like that, you don't ever like fully recover. Like you just learn how to manage, those like triggers or like feelings or whatever each individual person has. Like you learn ways to do that. Like I know for myself, like there are certain things that happens when I know I'm kind of starting to, I guess, lapse into a more depressive state, and, you know, like doing things to kind of counter that and make sure that doesn't happen. It's, everyone is so different. Mm. And, I think there is such a stigma around mental health that, you know, particularly as a fighter, we are seen as like invincible. Like we get in the cage and we fight and we're supposed to be like superhero like people. And I think the more that, you know, I know Rob has spoken about it as well. I think the more fighters that come out and talk about it, like I feel like we really have a good voice to show people that like it is okay to not be okay. It's okay to have these feelings or to feel this way. Just remember, like, you aren't the only one, and like, there is always somebody that will be there for you. Like, it is never worst case scenario. It's never as bad as you think it is.
Would it be fair to say that MMA helped turn things around for you?
Yeah, it definitely did. It gave me a purpose, something that I enjoy. Like, I enjoy learning and learning something new every day. Like, even, you know, after 7 years, I'm always learning something new. And I think that is what has helped me, is because there's a goal of continual evolution and to be the best martial artist that I can be. And it's definitely helped me a lot.
Who introduced you to MMA?
So no one really like introduced me. I was always interested. Like I would go and watch boxing, like local boxing fight nights back home, like yep. with my friends. And I went and picked up tickets to a local MMA fight night. And the person who gave me the tickets was like a gym owner, and he was a coach there. So we just got to talking. He was like, "Oh, come in, have a try, see if you like it." And, probably a couple of months later, I did.
Wow. And, yeah. and you had no background, right?
No background.
That's
no.
it. So you just went in there.
I played the piano and cello.
Wow.
I have no background.
Were you an athlete?
No.
Nothing.
I was so unathletic as a child.
So if like you, if I would have talked to a high school classmate about who you are now, they'd be shocked.
I guess, yeah.
Like if you say you didn't play anything, you didn't compete in any sport, and now you're an MMA fighter.
Yeah.
It's quite the change.
Yeah. It's pretty
I've seen
different.
You post photos of yourself like when you were younger.
You see my blonde hair?
Yes. I've seen, I mean, you obviously look different. No tattoos. I think your hair was a lot shorter, right?
Yeah. I've had so many different, this last decade has been like a drastic change in my hair choices.
Okay.
As I'm sure if you follow my Instagram story, so you've seen I've had black hair, I've had purple hair at one point, I had blonde hair, short hair, I've had it all.
When did you start with the tattoos?
So I got my first tattoo when I was in the military.
Oh, really?
So I was like 18. But like the big pieces, I didn't start until after my first fight in 2013. So I started with this one.
What is that?
They don't really mean anything. Like some of them have meaning, but for the most part, there's like a basic theme, and he just kind of went with it.
What's the theme?
gnarly.
Gnarly, okay.
But it's
is it always the same guy that does it?
Yeah, so most of my work is done by the same guy. His name's Zach. He's based out of the Gold Coast, Australia. But a couple of the ones on my leg is actually, one of them is based in Kansas City, and one of them I got done at a tattoo convention by this guy. I think he's Polish, and he's like this massive like Polish tattoo artist. So I was like, yeah.
Okay. Who's the woman there on your right arm?
So you're probably going to give me shit for this. Like, she's from a Zoo magazine.
Okay.
So she's like an adult magazine. I didn't pick that, guys.
Oh, Zoo as in like, yeah. I thought like a zoo, like an animal.
No, yeah. It's from like an adult magazine.
So for those that don't know, Zoo is like, kind of like Maxim, right? In America.
I guess.
It's not an American.
It's in Australia. Yeah,
okay.
In Australia.
So she's a model.
Yeah.
All right.
So
and why
everyone always thinks she looks like Laura Sanko. Well,
oh, right. Your partner in crime, yeah. Your co-host.
Yeah.
But what, like, why did you?
I didn't pick it.
What do you mean?
Well, he was just like, yeah, I got, like, he's like, I got this design. I was like, okay, let's go. Like, I'm pretty, like, if I give you an idea and I like it, I'm like, okay, let's go with it.
So you just have some random woman that means nothing to you on your arm.
Yeah, pretty much.
How do you feel about that? You're okay? I mean, it's nice. It looks good.
It goes with the theme. So.
Do you even know her name?
No, I don't. Look at that.
Wow, look at that. Have you ever met her?
Nope.
No. She probably doesn't even know that she's
probably
on the arm
not,
of a famous
no.
spider. Wow, that's amazing. So there's no like deeper meaning to any of this. It's just whatever's nice.
There's like a little bit of deeper meaning, but for the most part.
What is the deeper meaning?
I guess like this arm is kind of like heaven, the gates of heaven, and then transcend into like into hell, I guess, at the bottom. And like this one, it's like hell's trying to come up through the gates, and then like the archangel is trying to fight them back down.
Okay, that is deep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you done?
So I hope my mom doesn't watch this.
Okay.
So I still have like one full day left on my leg.
Okay.
But my goal is to maybe one day like get my full chest done.
Okay.
And maybe a couple others, but I just did 3 days straight.
Like recently?
Recently, okay. Like at the start of the year to finish most of my leg, and that kind of traumatized me a little bit because I did like my entire hamstring, calf, like the back of my knee and my kneecap, and in three consecutive days, and then I had to jump on a plane back here 5 days later. So I was in so much pain, so it'll be a minute before I get another one. That's okay.
Do you feel, and I really appreciate you opening up about these things because, you know, it's very important to see people who we put on a pedestal, athletes, famous people talk about this because we all go through this stuff. I go through very bad anxiety as well. And it's inspiring to hear you speak about this. And I mean, I can't imagine the anxiety that you go through before a fight, you know, walking into a cage.
Yeah.
This past fight, 56,000 or so people of your fellow countrymates, and there's pressure on you because you're coming off losses and stuff like that, and scrutiny and social media and all this stuff. Yeah. Do you feel like after October and winning, and not just winning, but winning back home, getting to go back home as a UFC fighter, do you feel like it has changed things for you? Has it re-energized you or given you clarity or any kind of extra motivation? How do you feel now 2 months removed from it?
It definitely has. I think like everything, like I was kind of thinking about this the other day, and I feel like for me, 2009, like the 2019, like the theme has really been about change and like growth. Like so many things have changed for me over the last year. It's been incredible. Just like, I remember February of this year, I went home for my birthday. I turned 29. I was like, oh my God, I'm turning 30 next year. Like, I'm dreading this. Like, I felt like I hadn't achieved anything I wanted to achieve by this age, and I was kind of dreading it. But as like the year kind of progressed and like everything that happened, and like I was able to grow through it and change through it, and like I've changed so much as a person. Like my training has changed, my nutrition has changed, like everything has changed so much, and like my mindset has changed that going into 2020, like I'm so excited because like I have a sense of freedom in the sense of like I feel like in control for the first time in like a really long time. Like I am in control of like what I want to do, and like if I want to fight you know, three times a year. Like, I'm going to fight three times a year. If I want to do something else, like, I'll go and do that. Like, if I want to, you know, I feel so empowered for the first time in a really long time. And I think even though I went through all the things that I did this year, not just in fighting, but outside of fighting as a person and everything that I dealt with there, I feel like it has helped me become the person that I am. And I'm actually really excited about turning 30. And nice. I'm really excited to kind of progress to the next decade. Like, I feel like I'm in such a different place and I'm growing, and I feel, even though like I am kind of getting on in, particularly when it comes to like MMA, because the MMA lifespan is so short.
Right.
It's such a physical sport and it has a very short lifespan, but like I really feel confident that like within the next year or two, like I'm going to be like where I want to be. And I'm really excited for that.
And so your next fight is on your birthday month. When's your birthday?
It's February 11th.
Okay. So pretty
it's
close.
The same as Stevens.
Oh, really?
We share the same birthday.
Wow. What a coincidence. So it's somewhat symbolic, right? That you get to fight on that, particularly month when you're turning 30, you'll be 30 the next time you fight.
Dirty 30s.
Yeah. So I've been told. And by the way, I was curious, because we talked about Rochester, but we did talk about what happened before this this fight in Australia. Did you feel that same anxiety the morning of, or was it?
No.
Okay, interesting.
Like, it was more of like a nervous energy, like I was ready to go. I actually come in super light on fight day. For some reason, like, my stomach was just playing like super weird. After that weight cut, and like I wasn't able to eat a lot, and like we tried to get like as much food as I could in, but like I actually walked into the cage at 153 pounds.
And that's lighter than usual?
Yeah, it's like 10 pounds lighter than usual.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was like interesting to me, because I was like, okay, like this is about to happen. Like, I've never even trained at this weight before, but no, I felt amazing in there. Like, I've started doing functional patterns for my strength and conditioning, which has been so life-changing for me outside of the sport. I have a scoliosis, and like it's helping straighten that out, and like I'm having less back issues and all that kind of stuff. And
wow.
You know, my trainer Stefan is he's been helping me with that, and he's been amazing. And James, you know,
James Krause,
you had him, the James Krause. You know, he's, in my opinion, one of the most underrated coaches and athletes in the sport right now. And I really hope that, you know, people can start seeing like the value that he brings to a lot of people and that he brings to MMA.
Yeah. He's had a phenomenal year, as a coach and fighter as well. And so I'm happy that you gave him a shout out. And so as you go on, you mentioned you work with a therapist, you said. Is it a sports psychologist?
No.
It's just general. Mm-hmm. Have you thought about sports psychology as well?
I've done like that before. And like for me, it wasn't the sports side that was the issue. It was like everything else.
Gotcha. Okay. So, and now you feel like that has helped? That just started?
Yeah. So I started that probably like a month after the Rochester fight.
Okay. So like 7 or so months it's been.
Yeah.
And you feel like it's helped?
Yeah.
Okay.
A lot.
Tremendously.
She's amazing. Anna's amazing. She does, like, she's so cool, and like she keeps me accountable, but she also like understands, like, my issue was like I would downplay a lot of like my past and like things that happened to me, and I would be like, oh, well, there's a lot of people much worse. She's like, well, yes, but like that doesn't take away from what you dealt with.
Right.
Like, just because somebody might, like, their situation might be worse doesn't take away from the fact that like you still went through these things and you still felt these things. Like, you know, it's all subjective.
You're an inspiration. And I thought that your moment at 243 was one of the best of that night. It was a very memorable night, but speaking with that kind of emotion and being open about speaking about these things, I know it's not easy.
No,
it's putting yourself out there.
It's kind of scary. Yeah. Just because like I don't want people to think differently of me or anything like that, but like I'm a human like everybody else. And I feel like I have a really good platform to be able to, you know, help other people that might not necessarily be able to have this platform, like, that realize that there are people like of all walks of life that go through all different types of things, that like it's okay, like if I can kind of work through it, like, you're not alone. Like, you can do it too. Like, and I have faith in those people, and I have faith in myself and anybody else. And I think anyone who speaks out about mental health, like, I have so much respect for, just because, like, it is such, like, there's such a stigma around it, and I think it needs to go.
I think next year is going to be a big one for you.
This time next year,
I think we're talking big things. It starts and it continues on February 29th, leap year. Very exciting.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's one every 4 years, of course, but a big fight for you. Thank you for coming in. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for being so open.
It was great to have you on for an extended period of time.
I know.
Now, and learn a bit more about you.
Here at the
Worldwide Leader.
Yeah.
Do you have more things to do for ESPN Australia?
I have a little bit to do tomorrow morning.
Okay. So. All right. Well, enjoy Connecticut.
Yes.
In the winter.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful place.
It's supposed to snow.
Yes.
I brought the snow with me because it was snowing bad.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Yesterday. I saw that with the Chiefs game. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Congrats on the win. Congrats on everything, and good luck in February.
So thank you very much.
And happy early birthday.
Oh, thank you.
Megan Anderson joining us in studio. One of the top contenders at 145 pounds. Yeah, you could just walk off. Okay. That's how we do it. It's a very informal show. Great stuff there. What a great story. And I have a feeling big things coming for her, because it's very wide open right now at 145 pounds in the UFC's women's division. Before we get to our next guest, I wanted to talk about this at the top of the show, but I went a little long on the main event. In the post-fight press conference, Max Holloway attended the press conference and was as classy as he usually is. I mean, again, you talk about, you know, Stephen Thompson, you talk about Megan Anderson, you talk about Max Holloway, you talk about the amazing people who are in our sport, who are role models in our sport. I mean, the collection of class acts, if you will, who are in MMA is just unbelievable. And Max has always said the right thing, has always done the right thing, being there with his son, his social media, as I've talked about, the guy is just the very best that MMA has to offer. Well, at the post-fight press conference, he showed up as we expected him to, answered questions, as you could see, with his son by his side, Rush, and was eating ice cream and enjoying the ice cream as well. He was wearing a headband, as you could see right over there, that read R.I.L. Vinny Boy. And no one asked him about this. I wasn't at the press conference, so I reached out to his team to find out what that was about. RIL stands for Rest in Love, and Vinny Boy is Vincent J. Kapoy. Vincent J. Kapoy is a cousin of Max Holloway. In fact, they grew up together at his grandma's house. They were very close. Unfortunately, on December 4th, Vinny Boy was killed on December 4th at the Pearl Harbor Naval Shipyard. He worked as a Department of Defense. He was murdered by a 22-year-old gunman. Not only was Vinny Boy murdered, but also Roldan A. Augustine was murdered as well. And this was a horrible tragedy, a senseless act. Once again, Max actually found out on his own birthday as he was flying from Hawaii to Los Angeles to start promoting UFC 245. Didn't speak about it publicly and didn't want to use it as any kind of excuse. And his team wanted to stress, if I spoke about it, that it did not come across as any kind of excuse. But he wanted to honor his cousin who had been killed just a couple weeks prior. And I wanted to make mention of that, that he was honoring him by wearing that headband. So I wanted to send my condolences not only to Max's family, but the Kapoy family and the Augustine family as well. And once again, Max Holloway, truly one of the best, and certainly know that he will be back and might be back soon fighting for the belt once again, because it seems like they want to give him an immediate title shot, and who would argue with that? Let's end today's program with another one of the great class acts in this sport. He lost on Saturday, but seemed to be in great spirits, and I kind of have a thing where I don't ask people who lose to come on the show the Monday after, but he seemed to be in great spirits, so I shot my shot, and he said, absolutely. Let's talk to Uriah Faber now, who was in action on Saturday night against Peter Yan. Uriah, thank you very much for doing this. How are you feeling?
Yeah, I feel great. We're just chilling with the family. Say hi, Jazz.
Hello.
We just had a little business meeting. We're going to see the tax guy and chill.
You say you feel great physically. I obviously see some bumps and bruises, but you're okay?
Yeah, I feel great. I've got two stitches and a black eye. And other than that, I feel awesome. I mean, the last little kick, he caught me right on the jaw. So it just was like, quick little thing. I was right back up. Felt great. So no headache, nothing.
Have you watched the fight again?
I haven't been able to watch it. I just got home, and I need to watch the – I need to order the pay-per-view, I think.
Oh, my. I feel like they can get you a link or something, right?
Oh, I mean, I don't know. That's like, you know, arguing with the bouncer, let you in for free.
Yeah.
It's 20 bucks.
Right. Fair enough. So how do you feel about the fight from what you recall? Was he tougher than you thought he would be?
No, I wouldn't say he was tougher. You know, to be honest with you, I mean, he's very tough, but I knew he was tough. I felt like he's one of the most dangerous guys, period, in the division. I knew that going in, and that's kind of why I wanted to fight, aside from the guys on my team. I think Song Yadong and Cody Garbrandt are both faster and just as powerful and a little more well-rounded. But I knew that was going to be a nasty fight. I knew that I would have a chance to catch him, but he had a very good chance of catching me. And to be honest, I came in the first round. And I feel like I left the first round feeling like, okay, I'm faster than this guy, and I felt his power, and I wasn't worried about his power. The difference was it's not about power, and it's not about speed. It's about precision and technique, and he's really a master of striking. And his precision is what hurt me in the second round. I less mobile in the second round for sure, and a little more willing to trade instead of moving around and being kind of elusive. And I think that was due to the first round, the success I had in the first round, and it caught up with me. And I knew going into it, the game plan was to start wrestling more in the second and establish for him to know that I could stand with him in the first and then start doing more in the second. But I think I felt so good in the first round that I, you know, made kind of a dumb move and kept playing his game.
Did you feel at any point like you hurt him, that you were, you know, that you were gaining ground on him and were closing in on him, so to speak?
Not that I recall necessarily. I feel like I was definitely a step ahead in that.
Did we lose Uriah there? I think we may have lost him. All right, well, we'll reconnect with Uriah here in a matter of seconds. I appreciate him stopping by, especially a couple days after the fight. Of course, he returned from retirement in July. As you recall, he defeated Ricky Simone, was out of action, retired in December of 2016 when he beat Brad Pickett in Sacramento, returned back in his hometown of Sacramento with that great win, 46-second win, and then had this fight against Peter Yan. Let's reconnect here with Uriah. Uriah, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
I've had you the whole time.
Sorry about that. You were saying?
I was saying, I don't necessarily feel like I had him on the fence or hurt or anything like that. He's a real durable guy. But I felt really comfortable in the first round. I think that comfort is what kind of backfired on me in the second round. You know, I felt like his power was like, okay, I can handle his power. I can handle his speed. But his real strength is punches and combos and landing things on the butt, which he did.
Do you regret taking this fight? Do you regret going from Simone to Yan?
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, I had so much fun in the build-up. I had so much fun in the fight. As you couldn't tell, I was having a great time.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of knew the answer to that question, but I felt like I had to ask anyway, because I think the narrative, and I brought it up as well, is like, why does Uriah have to fight this guy who isn't known but is so tough? And so I was just wondering if hindsight, you kind of felt like, yeah, maybe I should have fought someone who's a little less tough, maybe a bigger name, but a little less tough than this supremely tough Russian guy that not a lot of people know.
But why would I do that?
That's not your style.
Yeah, I mean, the truth is, Dana gave me a couple options, but I could tell that this is the guy that they're hanging their hat on, and I watched all the other fighters, and I feel like Peter's got the ability to go the furthest for the longest.
Right.
And he's also a guy that I know will probably fight over and over again from our camp. You know, a Song is going to see him. Cody's going to see him. So I figured I might just sneak in and get him and at least learn a lot about him for the next generation.
So almost like this was a scouting report for the younger guys. You wanted to feel him, touch him, go in there against him. So now you could impart that knowledge on the younger guys. That's really the mindset that you had going into this fight. You're that great of a captain.
No, well, no, the mindset was I was going to beat him.
Sure. Of course. But yes, but then you could also impart the knowledge as well.
And then pass on the knowledge.
Right. Right. And this was your first stoppage loss, since 2014 to lose that, well, like, you know, to lose via strikes. For you, does it make any difference, or a loss is a loss?
Loss is a loss, but I mean, the way I feel after the fight is, you know, I really enjoyed the process. For those that don't know, getting flipped in the jaw doesn't hurt at all. And I really enjoyed the whole thing. So it's, and I walked away with a nice check to end the day. You always forget about that until you get that check.
Right.
And I'm proud of my performance.
Can I ask you a really annoying question? You're holding the phone, but you're holding it over the camera. So I see like your hand. Can you hold it the other way? There you go. I'm just a stickler for that sort of thing. I'm sorry. So you seem to be in good spirits. You enjoyed the process. You're happy with the money. Have you decided if you're going to keep going?
You know, like I said originally, it's not like I'm planning on fighting on the top of my head right now. It's not like I want to do that. I kind of did like a bucket list where you turn 40 years old. And I actually said that on this show when I first retired, that maybe I'll come back and fight when I'm 40. So I was thinking about doing four fights at 40. Just kind of like a life hack and, you know, just another little capital raise. And, so I'm not opposed to that, but maybe I'll do one on my 41st birthday, maybe on my 42nd birthday and call it a quits.
So
no big plans to run through the division or anything.
So 41 would be, May 14th, correct?
Somewhere around 41. I mean, I fought around 40.
Okay. But you still want to keep going?
And, well, I'm not opposed to it.
Okay.
But I mean, I'm not going to be pursuing the belt at this moment. I'm going to be chilling with the family, staying in great shape, staying in the gym, and you know, it's I could or I couldn't. You know?
Is it almost like a situational thing where if they come to you with something really intriguing, okay, but if it's just like another fight for the sake of having a fight? Maybe not. Maybe you just don't come back.
Yeah, I'm not doing a fight just to have a fight.
Right.
I'll do it on my terms if I want to do it to celebrate my birthday or if there's something that's really intriguing.
But you will stay in the USADA, you know, pool.
My mom's going to kill me, buddy. You know that.
Why?
My mom has never been to one fight. You got to see the barrage of text messages I got after losing that fight, man. That's the worst thing. I got my neighbor crying on my shoulder. And I got, you know, my fiance here just, you know, wants to have a family cry session. I'm like, guys, I had a great freaking time.
I know. That's what I was saying when I was texting you, you know, like I sent you the, you know, like the condolences text and you're like having a blast. I'm like, wait a second. This guy is acting like he just won. So that's why I asked you to come on. I can't imagine. It's just amazing to have that mindset, but it speaks to why you have been so successful. You don't get too low. You don't get too high.
Well, I'll tell you this 150%.
Okay.
We've got a team of guys from Azerbaijan that come in. Tofik, Ruslan, and Terrell are three of the top guys. Tofik's actually fighting in the Risen tournament. He's going to fight two fights in one night in Japan. When those guys come in, I cannot help but want to jump in and spar a little bit. You know, this is before I became, you know, came out of retirement. When Song Yadong is in there beating everyone up, I can't help but like jump in and do a couple rounds just to test the water. When Cody was training for the title, when Chad was fighting for his last fight, I had to get a couple rounds in. Like, you know, I love this stuff.
Right. And by the way, did you recently get engaged? I didn't know you were actually engaged.
Yeah, we've been engaged for a long time. Look at that.
Wow. Mazel tov.
Arrow, you just stalk our... I know you're big time now trying to move past the MMA world, but you got to stay on top of it.
My bad. Well, that's amazing. But was this the first time that your fiance saw you lose in person?
Yeah, you know, Jaslyn's never been a big MMA fan. We got together after my career was way over with. And she, like, when we came back to Sacramento, because we're both in Sacramento, we were walking around on second Saturday, people were yelling at me and saying hi and shaking hands. And she goes, "You're like a local celebrity." And then we went to China, then we went to Australia. And it was like, oh, it's not just a local thing.
But to see a loved one, you know, get hurt like that, how did she react?
She was having a tough time with it.
Yeah.
But she's fine. She's a trooper. She's a tough girl.
Well done. And does mom watch live, or does she only watch after the fact?
My mom doesn't watch at all. And then she gets a little bit of information, makes it worse. Passed it on to my sister and my grandma, who all think I was in the hospital all night. I went there for an hour because you have to go to get stitches.
Okay. So calm down. But your dad was there, right? He usually is there.
Yeah, he was there.
Okay. But by the way, what about that footage? I don't know if you saw of Cody and Piotr afterwards going toe-to-toe. Did you see that? Were you there for that?
I did. No, I wasn't there. But I just saw it today, actually.
What did you make of that?
I FaceTimed with Cody afterwards. He mentioned something about that, but I got to see the gist of it.
What did you make of that?
The fight with Peter is going to happen over and over and over again in our gym. We've got, you know how many guys we have at that weight class that are top contenders? I mean, I really feel like Cody Stamann and Song Yadong and Cody Garbrandt are all bad matchups for Peter.
Mm.
But he's a tough bastard. I got to give a lot of credit to Yan.
Do you think he becomes champion? Do you think he has that in him?
Absolutely. At some point in his life, he'll be the champion for the UFC.
Yes. Wow.
There's something to say about somebody that has a singular focus, and he's definitely that guy. But Song is going to be a champ. I feel like Cody will be a champ. It's you know, this is a long career. It's 16 years for me.
Yep, you have been there. And you know what's interesting, Uriah? I thought of this earlier. You were the very first guest in the history of my show. You're the last guest of the decade. How about that?
Yeah, you really know how to keep it real, buddy.
I know. You think sometimes I hate on you, but you know you're always number one in my heart and my mom's heart too.
You don't hate.
What?
You just think you're real sly about, like, this little things you say. You
what know? Are you talking about? Out of love. Always out of love. Because you mean so much to me.
It's out of being the best reporter in the business.
Well, thank you. And love. A little bit of love.
Damn love, man.
Well,
damn love.
Heal up, my man. Thank you for doing this. I appreciate it very much.
All right.
Thank you for coming on after
the
fight.
Got it, guys. I hope everyone enjoyed the fight. You know, I feel like that could have gone my way. A couple things here and there. But that guy is tough, man. I got to give a lot of props to Peter Young.
Much respect, Uriah. Thank you very much. Talk to you soon.
All right, guys.
All right. There he is. Bye-bye. The one and only California kid himself, the great Uriah Faber, one of the all-time greats. All right, so that does it. Busy weekend coming up, of course, UFC in Busan, South Korea. Frankie Edgar, Chan Sung Jung, Volkan Ozdemir against Alexander Rakic, Duhu Choi against Charles Jourdain of Canada fame. Prelims, by the way, 2 a.m. Eastern. Cyril Gane returning to action on the preliminary card, 2 a.m. Eastern on ESPN, and then main card on ESPN Plus. But that's not the only event. Can I just mention Bellator's back in Hawaii with two events. They've got the Salute to the Troops show on Friday, and that will mark the promotional debut of someone named Josh Barnett. Have you heard of Josh Barnett on this show? Remember way back when he actually signed his contract? Remember that moment? Josh Barnett back in the Dizzle signed the contract. When was that, like in April or March? Something like that. Eric Perez making his promotional debut. And then the Saturday Bellator card features Alima Leigh McFarlane defending her title, coming back home once again to Hawaii. AJ McKee, part of the Featherweight Grand Prix. Neiman Gracie, a lot of familiar names. That's on this Saturday card. So plenty of MMA to come. That's this Friday and Saturday. Saturday's the final UFC card of the decade. And then there's the PFL show. There's the Bellator shows, end of the year, and the Ryzen show as well. So there's still a lot more of MMA to come. But for this particular Monday show, excuse me, feeling under the weather in case you didn't notice today. This particular Monday show, we are off till January 6th. So no show on December 23rd and no show on December 30th, January 6th. The following Monday, we return for the 2019 Helwani Nose Awards. Yes. Remember that? Last year, we had the first one we've been doing for like 6-7 years. It used to be called the MMA Awards. Then we rebranded it. And this is going to be a fun one. We'll have guests. We'll have panelists. We'll be giving out awards. It's always a fun time. We've been working on it for quite some time. So stay tuned for that. That's January 6th. And by the way, last year's, or at the beginning, it was technically December 31st. That was on TV. That was on ESPN2. But, you know, that was awesome. But what I didn't like about that was it wasn't available to all of you worldwide live. So this one is regular time slot, 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. In the UK. Normal spot, so everyone can watch, everyone can enjoy. It shall be very exciting. I'm looking forward to that. So this is the final Monday show, but I'm back on Wednesday. One more Helwani Show pod, and I appreciate everyone who has been downloading those. So stay tuned for that. We also have a couple more Ariel and the Bad Guys on ESPN Plus, year-end one and whatnot, so stay tuned for that. And next Monday, while I won't have a live show for you on December 23rd, we did tape, prior to UFC 245, a decade roundtable. How should I say it? End of decade roundtable. Myself, Brett Okamoto, and Mark Raimondi going through all the defining stories of the past 10 years. And let me tell you, there have been a lot. Like I said, we started the decade with five champions. BJ Penn, we had George St. Pierre, we had Anderson Silva, Lyoto Machida, Brock Lesnar. Those were the five champions of the UFC. Now we end with 12. So we went through almost year by year the big moments from the WBC merger, Strikeforce sale, all that stuff. And we'll have a lot more end of decade coverage on ESPN.com. So stay tuned for that. And for myself, one more time, you'll see me as far as live television is concerned on December 25th, Christmas Day. I'll be going to Toronto, Ontario, Canada to do sidelines for the Raptors against the Celtics on Christmas. If you're a remote NBA fan, you know that the Christmas Day games are a very big deal and almost like the start, the unofficial start of the season, and everyone's watching sort of like the Thanksgiving football games. I'm doing the first one. I can't believe that. In my home country, defending champs, sidelines, my third sideline gig, not to mention the ones in the summer for Summer League. So this is a huge honor for me, and I'm very much looking forward to that, and I appreciate everyone at ESPN for giving me that opportunity. But for now, we shall say goodbye. As far as this show is concerned, and as far as this decade is concerned, what a 10 years it has been. Getting a little emotional. I feel like New York Rick should be sitting right here next to me. But now we have Corporate Jake.
Yeah, he doesn't need to be here.
No, he doesn't need to be here. You're right. Where the hell?
He left
he
us.
Yeah.
Greener pastures,
actually,
I guess, right?
You know, I keep talking about him and bringing him back.
He doesn't talk about like, you.
Yeah.
Right?
He left me high and dry. You know what? You're right. Forget about him. It's been a fun decade. It's been a fun year. I appreciate everyone who continues to watch and support each and every week, downloading and rating and subscribing and all that stuff on the podcast and, of course, on YouTube and Twitter. I love you all. Thank you to everyone at ESPN, the great crew back there, Brian, and who else do we have? Of course, Corporate Jake and Isabel and Jordan and Addison and Elizabeth and Glenn and Christina and everyone involved, Roman and the whole team. Much love to everyone. Thank you to all the guests who have joined us on today's episode and every single episode this year. Thank you very much, Chase Hooper. Thank you very much, Jeff Neal, Leon Edwards, Jessica I, Kayla Harrison, Stephen Thompson, Megan Anderson, Uri Faber. Who else? There's Vacation Brit and Elisa and Kelsey and everyone. Aesthetic producer, everyone. I love you all. Back next decade, same time and place. Until they say peace. I'm out of here.
I look more like a tech support guy or college tutor or something, you know?
It stinks so bad because this, you know, industry is so cutthroat and, like, you can't have a bad moment. You can't make a mistake. You can't slip on the banana peel because they just treat you like crap.
We're old now. Yeah. I mean, you're older than you.
I know. I'm. Wait, how old are you?
37.
I'll be 37 in February. Okay. Not.
I'm
when's your birthday?
38 in July. So just a little bit older.
Just a little bit older.
Yeah.
You look young,
although
man.
You're a
you
lot
look
more
great.
Accomplished than I am.
Shut your butt.
Okay.
I'm the one that's, you know, keeping the troops rallied. I'm the one that's winning the ATT Fantasy League right now.
Oh, my gosh.
First female ever invited. We're in the finals. I'm a stud.
We even changed the lighting for you. So, on behalf of your management team, the nicest mofo
what?
Belt.
This, are you kidding me right now?
The real deal right here.
Yeah.
What do you think?
This is it. This is...
Did you have any idea this was coming?
No idea.
That it was in production? This is all them.
I had no idea.
Sugar is kind of my vice, I guess. Sugar and caffeine. And peanut M&Ms are probably just the one thing that I like the most.
Were you worried about losing that extra income?
Yeah, for sure. I was just thinking in my head, I was like, man, I'm going to quit my job. I'm going to get my beat. And then I'm going to go back and try to get my job back.
What's the top three?
Peanut.
Do you regret taking this fight? Do you regret going from Simone to Jan?
No, absolutely not.
Did you come this dress for us?
No.
Okay.
I like the mini M&Ms, not the regular ones.
Right.
They're pretty bad.
When do you think it happens?
Probably May, April, May.
So you just have some random woman that means nothing to you on your arm.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that?
It goes with the theme.
Do you even know her name?
No, I don't.
Probably Pretzel.
Pretzel.
M&M's, I just had them last night.